It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this 16th day of July 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's also where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room and be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe around. If you should happen to wander by and you've never done so before, pick yourself out a screen name, password, jump in, and you will be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Jimmy and Otto and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime and veteran, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a third-stage guild navigator, still does not wish to fold space into the heart of the sun, otherwise known as the Man Cave there in Northern California, and I can't hardly blame him. We've got Appalachian Sauna Radio again for this evening. Outside, 90 degrees. Inside, 88. And with, of course, the studio air conditioner going hell-bent for leather. So it's a bit stifling, but, well, the heat is offset by, by the wonders that are naked radio. And got a roll of paper towels here to occasionally blot away the sweat in the steamy, humid heat of the studio and outside, too. It's been a magnificent day. We've had a string of them of late. And as a consequence, I think my mood is at least better. Getting sunlight seems to make a big difference in that regard. Possibility of some thunderstorms wandering along later this evening. Almost a sure thing in the 9 or 10 o'clock hour. But no billable Rick, it is not. It's not a dry heat in this studio. There's no dry heat anywhere to be found in this part of the world. Mm-mm, no. It's a real wet, sticky, gooey kind of heat. But that's what we expect this time of year, because after all, I do happen to live in a temperate rainforest. In the way of making lunch for Agnes and Ferg and me today, I found out something new about the Blackstone griddle. It will boil water in a pot will boil. It takes a little while, but I made a classic old Roman recipe for dinner today. Cacio e pepe. I mortared out a bunch of black peppercorns and grated some Parmesan. I didn't have any Pecorino Romano. It's kind of hard to source around here, but the Parmesan was close enough. Damn, it was good. And those marinated. Those marinated chicken tenders that I was talking about, being such a miserable failure, you know, drying out on the Acorn the other day, they did real well on the griddle, and they went fantastically with the pasta. It's really, really simple. I did learn a bit of a hard lesson today because I was casting about. I didn't have all my mise en place. I didn't have that all handy. Everything wasn't immediately to hand. So the pasta overcooked a little bit. When you make that, you want it to be al dente at most, because you're going to cook it again out of the boiling water and into the skillet. But it's really simple. It's just butter and olive oil and freshly ground black pepper, you know, a coarse grind. And you melt the butter along with the and the olive oil in there too. You let it get till where the water has bubbled away out of the butter, and then with that nice and hot, you put your black pepper in and let your black pepper sort of fry in that for about a minute, and then you toss in your pasta, hit it with a little bit of the water from the boil, and wonderful things happen. And then at the end, you toss in the cheese, you toss it around, and plate it, hit it with a little salt, and, well, you're in a happy place. And it was fantastic. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. First off, thanks go out to Terrace and Yuki, who knocked out the remainder of fundraising for yesterday evening. Thank you both very kindly. And thanks to our subscribers for this day. Thank you to Reinhardt in on the Virginia coast. Thank you to Brock. Thank you to Timothy. And thank you to other Timothy, members of the Fraternity of Tim. And thank you to Glenn in upstate New York. Thank you all very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program, making the continued existence of the program possible. Yes. Of course, the standard offer applies. If anyone would like to become a new subscriber, we can always use them. And that's real easy to do over at headon.live. I always forget exactly what the language is, but if you'd like to be a new subscriber, just go to headon.live. I'm doing it now. And therein, it's right there. Make this donation monthly. Click that, put in whatever number you want, and away you go. And if you put in a 1, a 0, a dot, and 2 zeros, you'll know that you are out every bit of not quite a half a stick of chewing gum per program. Per 3-hour program. How about that? Cheap. Yeah. Thank you very kindly to Jeremy, as a member of the 1 out of 100, getting us started this evening. Thank you, Jeremy. That means we got 195 to go. Thank you very kindly. Note coming in to get us started from Steve in New York. The thorn of thorns, at least as I see it. I've been trying to articulate just how bad Donald J. Trump has screwed this country and exactly how to articulate it. It's just my way of seeing things. I understand this really says it to me. He peed on our fucking rug. Yeah, and that rug pulled everything together. It pulled the room together. And now our rug is peed on. It's never a bad time for a reference to the Holy Book of Dudism. Yes. So, program note. Here in about, 50 minutes or so, I'll be joined in conversation by conversationalist extraordinaire Dan Fisher. Dan told me he's got a list of things he would like to talk about, but said he'll be perhaps feeling just a little bit more frivolous this time through, a little bit more willing to talk about, you know, pop culture stuff and whatnot. He even told me today that he was thinking of sitting down and watching, wait for it, Galaxy Quest. And I told him that would be really cool, because I found over at Amazon Prime, unpaid product placement, of course, over at Amazon Prime, the documentary about the making of Galaxy Quest is out. I think it's called Never Surrender. And it's a real delight to watch. And I highly recommend it. But who knows? I mean, if it'll be interesting to find out if Dan decided to give it a watch or no. And we'll all just have to wait for about 49 minutes. Or slightly longer to find out. Billable Rick with a message for Steve in New York. Please tell Steve that Donald Trump did a lot more than pee on our rug. He actually shat all over it and tells us that we made the mess. Well, come November 3rd, we've got a chance to rub his nose in it. Bad. Bad dipshit. Bad. All right. So, where to begin? As if it were not horror enough, we found out in the last, 48 hours or so, by virtue of not a public release, but a private release in Minnesota. Local government, and by that I guess we would mean Hennepin County. Sort of released body cam footage from one of the cops who was part of the murder of George Floyd. And if it was not bad enough already, this made it infinitely more so. Horrible. Horrifying. And we thought 8 minutes and 48 seconds was bad. No, it turns out they tortured him. And when you're being tortured to death, every second matters. They tortured him for more like 9.5 minutes. A good 45 seconds or so more torture. And the what passed for policing here was nothing short of brutal, criminal. So the court unsealed yesterday the body cam footage, as noted, from cameras that were worn by Thomas Lane and Alexander Kung, that, in the words of NBC News, captured the struggle between Floyd and the police. Although that doesn't strike me as being particularly apt or accurate language. Seems like most of the action was on the part of the, dare I say it, pigs. Because, well, that's what they behaved like. It begins with Officer Lane walking up to George Floyd's car and tapping on the driver's side window with the butt of his heavy flashlight. And bear in mind, you and I can't see this. The general public is not allowed to see this. In order to see it, people had to make an appointment and watch it in a particular location, and then they were allowed to write about it. Members of the public can go and watch it if you make an appointment, but no one is allowed to record it, because we couldn't have information like this going public here in a country with a so-called free press. It was, you'll recall, all over an allegation of a bad $20 bill. And so when Officer Lane startles George Floyd in his car, the next thing Lane does is pull out his freedom protector and start screaming, "Show me your hands! Show me your hands!" Because Officer Lane is a chicken shit, and he's afraid of everything, and he's in the wrong damn business for that. George Floyd apologizes. He says, "I'm sorry, officer." He puts both hands on the steering wheel. He keeps saying, "I'm so sorry." He keeps telling them that he wants to do what they want him to do. He says, "I got shot the same way, Mr. Officer, before." Then, without ever having told him what the charges were against him, after he gets out of the car, they handcuff him and start to stuff him in the back of the squad car. And he says, "Please, please don't put me in the back of the squad car. I'm claustrophobic. I recently got over COVID-19. Please, please, please." And he eventually falls out the passenger side of the car and says, "Thank you." And it's after he's fallen out of the car that Derek Chauvin comes up and drives his knee into George Floyd's neck for about 9.5 minutes. And George Floyd spends the majority of those last waning moments of his life begging for his life, not even knowing why they were doing it to him. "I can't breathe, please. Your knee in my neck. Shit." God, it's sickening. Cold-blooded murder. There's a little bit of chat back and forth with Officer Lane. Somebody asked him, "You okay?" He says, "Well, yeah, I'll live." The whole time that they're murdering a human being without even giving him the common decency of telling him why. And Derek Chauvin keeps his knee on George Floyd's neck all the way up until the moment when he passes out. And even after that, he lets up long enough to let them put him on a paramedic stretcher. And the paramedic then insists that one of the cops perform chest compression, CPR, in the back of the ambulance. Dispatch indicates that they knew that he had gone into full-on cardiac arrest, and yet instead of taking him straight away to the emergency room, They pulled the ambulance over a block or so away. And let him die. But the American people dare not be allowed to see this body cam footage, because it makes it ever so much worse. And there's nothing you can say that hasn't already been said. There's nothing you can think that hasn't already been thought. Except in the abiding, aching need to see these four members of a gang in blue punished for their gang crimes and deprived of their liberty for as long as the law of the state of Minnesota allows. Because there's damn sure not going to be any federal action, not as long as Bill Pepe the Frog Barr remains the chief law enforcement officer for a president who's the son of a goddamn Klansman. Oh, no. Revolting. In other news, we've got more COVIDiots. Dangerous ones at that. The story coming out of California. And as far as I'm concerned, this person is a hero. A Los Angeles area grocery store employee who saw a mask hole COVIDiot assaulting another shopper . The mask hole COVIDiot had refused to wear a mask, even though there's a legal requirement. And when he was told he had to wear a mask or leave, he became infuriated and started to try to ram a woman with his shopping cart. And I guess at least one employee at this Ralph's store, which I'm pretty sure is a union shop, good. This employee pulled out a can of pepper spray and hosed the mask hole down. Speaking to CBS Channel 2, a witness said, "I was just coming down to the end of an aisle, and all of a sudden I heard some commotion, and people were getting in the aisle. I looked down there, and there was this guy just yelling at someone, and then all of a sudden you see him, you know, take the handles of his cart and just try to ram this woman. I think he was just screaming about the mask. He didn't want to wear a mask. And the next thing you see is the guy laying on the ground, having had a bunch of milk dumped on him to try to take away the fire of the pepper spray. Good. You know, there's an old doctrine in the law that says that the law will not hold liable a third-party rescuer. And that's what this guy was. This employee. Don't know if male or female. But whoever came along and gave the mask hole COVIDiot, likely maggot, a face full of pepper spray, may have saved a life. Because these dirty, diseased freaks are getting worse and worse. And there's a new handful of these stories every damn day. A mask hole COVIDiot in Puerto Rico. A tourist during a viral pandemic, mind you. He spit on a grocery store employee there. And according to the report from Univision, it happened at Rincon, Puerto Rico, at a grocery store called Econo. And he was wearing his mask as a chin strap, not taking steps to avoid spreading the disease. And an employee says, please put your mask on. At which point the mask hole, COVIDiot, maggot, betcha, spits on the worker, and a security guard comes up and clocks him right in the face. And then says that the police have been called to pick up the mask hole. Oh, no. Wait, I got that backwards. The mask hole says he's called the cops to... The cops are coming right now to get this piece of shit arrested. And instead, the cops came and arrested the mask hole. Let's check in with the actual audio.
Yeah, guys, here. How's it going, man? I'm at Econo. Check this shit out. Fucking guy just assaulted me with a golf club. See that piece of shit right there? That's the fucking piece of shit you gotta watch out for when you come around here carrying a motherfucking golf club, Sheriff, like he's some fucking tough guy. So he decided to blast me in the fucking mouth, so check it out. Yeah. The cops are coming right now. Get this piece of shit arrested.
No, they didn't. And the mask hole is wearing a crucifix, of course. And I invite members of the Horn Family Community Congregation to engage their linguistic skills and tell me where the mask hole's from. It sounds like north of New York, but I could always be wrong. Yeah. Martin William Drew. And he'll be answering court charges sometime in the fairly near future. Then there's Rogue's Island. Hi, Albert. Hi, Charlene. Where WJAR Channel 10 has the story of 63-year-old William Beauchesne, who decided to argue with 30-year-old Ralph Buontempo, both of whom had gone to a convenience store in Lincoln, Rhode Island. Ralph Buontempo wasn't wearing a mask. Well, it got ugly fairly quick. They started yelling obscenities at each other. And Mr. Buontempo knocked a cup of coffee out of Mr. Beauchesne's hand. The coffee then splashed all over the store manager. The store manager had gone outside to the two to try to de-escalate things. And then Mr. Buontempo, 30, got into his vehicle, this based on security camera footage. Buontempo got into his car and accelerated in reverse and hit Mr. 63-year-old Beauchesne while he was just standing there. Mr. Buontempo has been charged with assault with a deadly weapon, namely his automobile. Of course, then again, if you're an asymptomatic carrier and you're not wearing your mask, couldn't we think of that as assault with a deadly weapon as well? Seems like. And there's a little bit of a follow-up story from one we had yesterday, the story coming out of Florida. The guy who pulled a gun on a shopper in Walmart. It was the Walmart in Royal Palm Beach. Happened this past Sunday. We talked about it last night. Someone asked him to wear a mask. He tried to, well, the first he started off with a middle finger and some obscenities, and then he accelerated and escalated to pulling his freedom protector and threatened to kill the individual who had asked him to put on a goddamn mask. Palm Beach County Sheriff's Department posted a request for information and public assistance saying, "You think you're big and bad because you pull out a gun?" Palm Beach County, we need your help to find this individual wanted for assault with a firearm at a local Walmart in Royal Palm Beach. He left the store in a white Chevy Equinox. This took place July 12, 2020. Here's the interesting part of it. There's video of it, so we know we're dealing here with a white guy, because you can see him in his little gray short pants and his black short sleeve shirt with his freedom protector pulled. And the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Department says they've identified the mask hole COVIDiot. And they will not state whether or not he has been charged with anything. They say that he is cooperating with the investigation. Why haven't they released his name? And for fuck's sake, why hasn't he been charged? Well, after all, this is Florida, where if there was a brown or black person within a 100-foot radius of the mask hole COVIDiot, thanks to the National Ruble Association, he might be able to claim that he was just standing his ground. Damn nation. But no name and no charges. Go figure. But we'll have more of these each and every day. Because it's kind of like the polling data that I saw this morning when I tuned into my filthy morning habit. All the numbers for Trump were 30%, 32%, 35%. And that's the number of abject, malevolent, malignant idiots there are in this country. They're not just people that we have political disagreement with. They are people who lack sufficient brain power to not do or not care if tremendous harm is done to our country. And for those of us who are normal and decent, or try to be, trying to sort out what it is that they're they feel such loyalty to is a real head scratcher. And it just gets, you know, it's something that I've been saying for a while. It bears repeating from time to time. No matter how weird yesterday was, it was guaranteed that today was going to be weirder. And no matter how weird today has been, it is a lead pipe cinch that tomorrow will be weirder still. Now, if you try to visualize this with some sort of mathematics, the graph goes off the grid pretty quickly on an axis that we will refer to as W for weird or weirdness. And so, you know, you may recall, not too awfully long back, when Nitwit Nero evinced his concern about toilet flushing.
People are flushing toilets 10 times, 15 times. Not me, of course, not me, but you. So you're in there 5 times longer than you're supposed to be. I call the guy, something wrong with this? No, sir, it's you. I'm talking about 9 inches. It's a very unpleasant experience. Isn't it inelegant? Drunk with the toilet flushing 10 times. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I'm not eating Oreos anymore.
Yeah, okay, so you recall that. And that's a magnificent tune that's been recorded to memorialize that moment. Then there was a shower heads. You take a shower, the water doesn't come out. You want to wash your hands, the water doesn't come out. What do? Do you stand there longer or take a shower longer? Because he was blithering and blathering away today about taking a sledgehammer to the basic legislation that forms the core of the mission of the Environmental Protection Agency. Because he aims to kill it.
Why do we want to protect an environment? It's just an environment. People have to have jobs. Jobs.
And this was all in another one of his attempts at a campaign rally in the Rose Garden or somewhere on the grounds of the White House.
It's like nobody's ever seen before with me.
And then having railed against, showers and toilets. Well, to use a term from one of his right-wing lick spittles. Today, it was dishwasher's time in the barrel.
We made it so dishwashers now have a lot more water, and in many places, in most places of the country, water is not a problem. It's called rain.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
It's called rain.
Now, we've got this thing in this country called the drought monitor. And curiously enough, what it does is it monitors drought conditions in the United States.
In many places, in most places of the country, water's not a problem. It's called rain.
Most of Texas, Oregon, Nevada, Utah, New Mexico, Colorado, California, and I'm not sure if it's the better or the worse half of Oklahoma. The Dakotas, Wyoming, Arizona, Kansas, Nebraska. Those states are all in drought.
It's called no rain.
Merciful God. Well, I think that's part of it, Randy. Randy in PA says these people are subscribed to a hollow, empty, symbolic patriotism nationalism. They are that. But at some point in time, don't we have to at least ponder the possibility that they, like their God Emperor, are just plain stupid? I mean, honest to Jesus, how stupid do you have to be, A, to continue supporting this guy, but moreover, B, how stupid must you be? See? Don't try this at home. How stupid do you have to be to ram people with shopping carts or say things like, I ain't never gonna wear no face diaper, MAGA! Because as we have so often discussed, the Venn diagram of Trump supporters and the Venn diagram of stupid people who do things like say, you can't make me wear no mask. It's in the Constitution. Right there next to where it says, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's a single circle. Some of this, I suppose we could say, is a kind of cultivated stupidity. A stupidity that is a matter of the Fox News TV radio Rwandas and the Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground, making people dumber than they already were. There's no getting around that. And I don't know how you would begin to sort this out in history, but could it be that one third of our country has always been this goddamn dumb? Always been this disconnected from reality? Always been this motivated by hatreds and petty jealousies and bigotries? Don't we sort of have to acknowledge that that might be possible? That for every Edison, there's been 100 morons, maybe 1,000? For every genius, there are an exponentially larger number of pure idiots. In the midst of a pandemic in 2020, how do we evade that? And the stupidity is at multiple levels. And the stupidity is weaponized and spread by people who hold degrees from some of the most prestigious institutions of higher learning that this country has to offer. I offer as exhibit what the fuck this evening, of course, again, Kaylee McEnany, White Power Barbie, White Privilege Barbie, who today decided to explain to stupid America how we've got to reopen every school in the country in the fall in blind, ignorant obedience to Corona Caligula. This is, well, we're in hockey puck territory. Here we go.
You talked about earlier with school districts, but we're seeing more school districts, at least in Virginia, for example, last night, deciding to go online only. What does the president say to parents out there who are now going, okay, what do I do with my kids?
Yeah, the president has said unmistakably that he wants schools to open. And I was just in the Oval talking to him about that. And when he says open, he means open and full, kids being able to attend each and every day at their school.
He wants that. You know, okay, I want that too. I want my grandkids to have a normal, or as close to normal, because, you know, this is America where our children spend part of their, most every one of their school days learning what to do if somebody comes in with their Second Amendment remedy and decides to start slaughtering children in school. So normal, well, it's another one of those instances where the word is little more than a setting on a dryer. But we'd like to see schools open. Sure, why not? It's part of what we think America looks and feels like. So we'd all like to see the schools open. But what we'd like to see, and what we have the ability to make happen, are radically different things. It is not possible right now to safely reopen schools in this country because we haven't done any of the things that need to have been done in order to make school reopening possible. These maggots like to cite, oh, Sweden and Denmark and Germany and France and so forth. Well, they're reopening their schools. Well, they sacrificed and they battled. And they flattened the curve. And they had responsive governments that didn't just leave the citizenry out flapping in the wind, hung out to dry. We, on the other hand, have a crooked-ass president who is surrounded by sycophants and bootlicks, lick spittles, cut purses, foot pads, highwaymen, and various and sundry types of criminals. So, you know, he wants the schools to reopen in the fall. You know what? Frogs want wings so they won't bump their little green butts on the ground when they hop. But these are homicidal maniacs. And they really don't care how many children they kill. And it's hard for decent people to fathom that, but they don't. Sociopaths, psychopaths, and good soldiers all. They simply don't care. It's a roulette wheel with a million spots, and they're not going to stop spinning it until the ball has landed in all 1 million spots.
The science should not stand in the way of this.
Okay, we're going to go back, and I'm not going to interrupt it this time because we've got to get it in toto. It's got to be taken in context, lest she complain that she is not being taken in context. In context, this this white privilege Barbie.
For example, last night, deciding to go online only. What does the president say to parents out there who are now going, okay, what do I do with my kids?
Yeah, the president has said unmistakably that he wants schools to open. And I was just in the Oval talking to him about that. And when he says open, he means open and full, kids being able to attend each and every day at their school. The science should not stand in the way of this. And as Dr. Scott Atlas.
That's what I thought I heard. Chomped right through the hockey puck. Science should not stand in the way of reopening schools. She really, really said that. Science that shows that it is not possible for this once great nation to reopen its schools should not stand in the, you know, without killing children, should not stand in the way of reopening schools and killing children. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Ron and Raleigh says, stupid, you say? Not only are they stupid, they're a toxic mix of stupid, violent, and pig-eyed mean. Imagine being willing to gun down someone simply because they ask you to wear a mask. Attorney General Bill Pepe the Frog Barr just had a man with dementia executed because, well, you know, because. Because. Because of the fascist things he does. But da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, because that's true. He did. We don't want science to get in the way of opening schools. We don't want science to get in the way of our psychopathic yearning to murder children. And some states are going to go forward because they're good. They have good maggot governors. Down in Georgia, you know, I worry about our friends in the Horn Family Community Congregation down in Georgia. I worry about Steve and Miss Karen. I worry about Hung Like Jesus. I worry about Reggie from Decatur. Because the people of Georgia are just going to let Brian Kemp go on killing and 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 do nothing to stop him. And he's got 2 more years in office. How much more killing can he do? Well, he just invalidated every mask ordinance of every city, every town, every village in the state of Georgia. Places like Albany, where the Rona was running wild. And they try to put in place a mask ordinance. Brian Kemp, psycho killer, qu'est-ce que c'est, invalidated all the mask requirements. And nothing happens. Because I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, I guess. Can't let science stand in the way of reopening schools.
Said, I thought this was a good quote. Of course we can do it. Everyone else in the Western world, our peer nations, are doing it. We are the outlier here. The science is very clear on this.
Yeah, God damn it, white power Barbie. We're the outlier on this because a third of this country picks its teeth with its toenail clippings and they vote for your fucking malignant boss. They enable your malignant ass to have a job. Jesus, somebody should call on the president of Harvard University to speak up. Disavow this woman, crawl in sackcloth and ashes to somewhere and beg forgiveness for ever having conferred a degree upon her. That or just confess that, well, Harvard's closing its doors. Because we don't want to run the risk of ever turning loose another one of these monstrosities into the public. Holy cow. Disgusting. But there's more.
That, you know, for instance, you look at the JAMA pediatric study of 46 pediatric hospitals in North America that said the risk of critical illness from COVID is far less for children than that of seasonal flu. The science is on our...
Oh, the science is on our side, but we're not going to let the science get in the way, are we? Oh, no. And did you know that? Did you notice the magic language? The risk is far less. That's not the same, Kaylee Maganini, as the risk is zero. And as long as the risk is some number larger than zero, then you're talking about sacrificing children. You toxic twit. When you were just a little toe-headed little toddler girl, would you have wanted your children, your mother and daddy to send you off to somewhere where there was, you know, maybe a risk at less than one, but not zero, of, you know, you being killed? Do you have kids, Kaylee Maganini? Oh, yeah, but they only go to the good schools, right? Hell's bells. The science is on our side, but we don't want to let science get in the way.
Our side here, and we encourage for localities and states to just simply follow the science, open our schools. It's very damaging to our children. There's a lack of reporting of abuse. There's mental depressions that are not addressed, suicidal ideations that are not addressed. It's important, they're essential, and they must reopen.
Yeah, and again with the mental health thing. She's pure poison. And once again, not one of those members of the multimillionaire Johnny-on-the-spot Washington press corps is willing to simply look at her and say, "Lady, what in the name of bleeding Jesus is wrong with you? Are you sick? Are you demented? Does your family trust you with sharp objects?" Not one. Not one. And therein lies the great failing. So here endeth the filibobster. And I'm glad to be going away from people like Kaylee Maganini and Clorox Claudius inveighing against shower heads. And instead engaging in conversation with my dear friend, Dan Fisher. And as we start the second hour of the program, a reminder, we got $195 to raise to keep even with the week. So 19 and a half people at $10 or 10 people at $19.50, whatever. Question coming from Brother Deacon Asa, subject line, reopening schools. Help me out here, Bob, and the greater Horn Family Community Congregation at large. The repig fuckers have spent the better half of the last 50 years telling us that parents need to homeschool their kids, and school's not as important as the libtard cucks try to make it look like. The fuck happened all of a sudden? Why has the repig fucker class all of a sudden developed such a hard-on for reopening schools? Sincerely yours, Brother Deacon Asa. Well, you know, maggots are strictly transactional. It's just like what goes on a busy night in a strip joint. It's all transactional. It's whatever gets the transaction to its logical conclusion. And the longer things look abnormal, the longer things are abnormal in this country, the worse it is for Nitwit Nero. And see, if one little kid here, one little kid dies there and another little kid dies somewhere else, those aren't going to register as a blip. They'll just be little individual moments of agony and horror. And it won't affect the overall outcome of the election. But all the schools staying closed will. But all the schools aren't going to stay closed. I'm sure they'll open wider than a barn door in places like Georgia and Florida. Texas. Although some school systems in Texas are saying, oh hell no, like in Houston. And those places will, in turn, say, them other states is a bunch of sissies afraid to go to school because of a little old virus. Jesus. But I'm like I said, I would far rather, and I've been looking forward to this conversation all week. Hey, Dan, how are you?
All fine. Enraptured. You're on fire tonight.
Well, it's 90 degrees here in the studio, Dan, so that kind of makes a little bit of sense.
Arya, do you ever do these things without wearing pants? I mean, you don't have to wear clothing at all, right?
No. This is naked radio. I do naked radio all summer long every year.
You know, this is fine, too, because as we all know, Joe Biden's coming for our windows. So with no windows, we can all be as naked as we want.
No windows. That's just like the little cell that Thomas Jefferson built for Sally Hemings at Monticello.
Yeah, you know, first we came for all the guns, and we took, you know, it's well documented, we took all the guns away. And then we had the death panels, you know, and it's well documented that we killed Grandma. And now we're going after your windows. And you know that, right? You know to which I'm referring.
I think I may have missed this one somehow.
Oh, golly.
Dan, disenlighten me.
Well, you know the which interview was it recently? I guess the president went on about. When I say the president, does that still count? I mean, I know that's not the preferred term for him. It's a habit of mine to refer to anybody that lives in the Oval Office as the president. Anyway, what Trump said was he had recently talked about how brave he was not going along with the Paris Agreement and the environmental regulations that everybody else in the world has agreed is common sense. And he said that, you know, Biden's plan to increase the number of energy-efficient buildings would harm the vision of their occupants. And this is a direct quote. It says, that means no windows, no nothing. It's very hard to do, Trump said. I tell people when they go into some of these buildings, how are your eyes? Because they won't be good in 5 years. I hope you don't mind cold office space in the winter and warm office space in the summer, because your air conditioning is not the same as the good old days. So, yeah, we're now going to have windowless buildings, according to our dear leader. You know, that'll go with the windmill cancer and other science facts.
Oh, naturally, yes. We can't forget the windmill cancer.
That was my reference. So much gibberish.
And there is a continuum, Dan, long before Trump became president, we had that threat from the right wing that Agenda 21 is going to take away all our golf courses.
Yes. Yeah, and we saw that turn out. We've got no more golf courses. It's nothing but parking lots, as far as the eye can see. For electric cars only, though. Only electric cars.
Yeah. Well, here in West Virginia, you might be interested to know, and for some reason I've got some feedback coming at me, and I don't know exactly why.
It's your guitar solo.
It could be.
It'll turn down the reverb on.
But here in West Virginia, my buddy Dr. Bill has a Prius.
Uh-huh.
And he was horrified when he went to, you know, pay his taxes so he could get his next year's sticker on his tag to find out that he was going to be paying about twice as much as somebody with a plain gasoline engine in terms of his property taxes. Because he's got a car that runs to one degree or another on electricity.
Was that federal tax?
No, the state of West Virginia.
Uh-huh. That's why you need to get one of those coal-powered cars, you know.
Well, no, that's the funniest thing. That's how stupid Republicans are around here, Dan.
Uh-huh.
Because if you've got some sort of a plug-in hybrid, whether it's a partial hybrid or a full electric or whatever, in West Virginia, every time you plug it in at night, you're plugging into the coal-fired power grid.
Uh-huh.
And so you're literally powering your automobile with coal.
Which is jobs, jobs, jobs.
Jobs, jobs, jobs. and yet the Republican legislature passed this. A punishment for people who drive cars that don't require gasoline because I guess at that point in time, they were trying to stay on the Christmas card list of the oil and gas industry.
Right. Yeah, well, I'm surprised they haven't developed one with like a little coal burning oven in the back seat that like Junior and little Susie can be shoveling the entire time you're driving. You know, wouldn't that be sweet?
That's such a lovely image. Hey Dan, let me ask you: are you on a speaker?
Well, I'm on my computer. Am I echoing? Is it my feedback?
It might be.
I thought the last time around I had when I put on the headphones that gave problems. But let me, Dolly, can you just vamp for the
Oh, we're the boys of the chorus. We hope you like the show. We know you're rooting for us, but now we have to go.
See, I would have gone with the syncopated clock, but that's me. But that's a good one, too. There, let's try this. So, every time I come on the show, there's always some sort of technical difficulty.
Well, that's me.
And, for me to have the headphones on.
It seems to have alleviated the problem.
Okay, good. Well, I guess I was recording the sound of my computer's audio with this mic I have.
The mic was picking up the speaker and sending me back at me.
Oh, well, that's not pleasant. And I want nothing but a pleasant listening experience for all of our friends out there. Hello, friends out there, by the way. Thank
pleasant,
you.
Pleasant and adequate, Dan.
Well, your fans are exceptional. You may be adequate, but your fans certainly go above and beyond. Many of them have become Facebook friends of mine, and in this day and age, any Facebook friend that doesn't post something dangerous or just batshit is always welcome to my quote unquote news feed. So anyway, glad to be here as usual. I have no idea. There's nothing to talk about these days.
Oh, not a damn thing.
Just so pleasant and peachy that...
Well, I just have to ask, did you watch Galaxy Quest? That's what I want to get out of the way here.
I did.
Oh, you know, wait a minute.
Okay.
Dan gets a cowbell. He watched Galaxy Quest.
You see, the last time I was on, I was in a pretty somber, fittingly somber mood. You know, this was not that long after... You know, after the murders, the George Floyd murder and other murders, and they're still going on. It's not like, hooray, we solved that problem. Not at all. But it especially affected my mood in that current time. And since then, I've tried to be less, you know, in my social media presence, I've tried to be less about like, hey, does anybody want to talk about movies that start with the letter W? And more about, hey, let's talk about all the shit show out there and what we can do to maybe alleviate it slightly. But given that, and we certainly, I think, will talk about that kind of stuff tonight, this evening, I'm a little more like, you know, it's okay to talk about Galaxy Quest. You know, we don't have to spend 2 hours on it, but it's okay.
But you could. You really could. It's that good.
It's pretty darn good. It's very clever. I think my favorite part of it was actually the alien race. What are they called? Thermians?
Thermians, or termites, if you're, you know, Jason.
Yeah, termites. I just thought they were just brilliantly acted and directed, you know, just the way they moved and the noises they made and the way they responded. It's funny because I happen to be reading a science fiction story right now by Robert Heinlein called Stranger in a Strange Land.
One of my favorites.
We see, that's the thing. I've always been into like monster movies and comic books when I was a kid. So everybody assumed like I'd go the route of science fiction reading and maybe even writing it. But it never really caught on to me that much, just because I think a lot of my early science fiction experiences were about, like, you know, and all these like sort of myth building, world building stuff like Frank Herbert or even Tolkien, where it's, you have like 30 pages about how the huts were built. Or who's second cousin to who on the planet, you know, Tiberius or something. But I like this thing I'm reading now, Stranger in a Strange Land, because it's really more earthbound. You know, it reminds me a lot kind of Vonnegut's social commentary.
It's, exactly. It's very much social commentary, but from a political standpoint, what you'll probably notice is that it is the polar opposite of Vonnegut's political commentary. Because, actually, if Ayn Rand had never existed, libertarianism would be light years further ahead than it is now, because Robert Heinlein would have been the proponent of libertarianism.
Uh-huh.
And so,
well, don't spoil it if it gets super asshole-y.
I'm not saying that at all. The real Libertarian Manifesto that he wrote, and it's a fantastic story. It would make a great movie. Maybe somebody tried at one point, but they failed. The Moon is a Harsh Mistress.
Uh-huh.
That is really libertarian. But the thing is, as compared to, say, Atlas Grunted or whatever it is, it's a damn good yarn.
Yeah, just using the L word in any context just gives me the willies, you know.
I don't want to spoil it for you, because there's also a lot of good commentary on the nature of what it means to be a human being.
Mm-hmm. So the libertarians are just kind of like MAGAs who know how to use big words
and smoke dope.
Right? You know, that's, you know, selfishness is a virtue, et cetera, et cetera. And it's true that Vonnegut goes for humanism. And what does he say? For God's sakes, babies, be kind. You know, that's his thing. But anyway, so you know, but reading Stranger in a Strange Land, you know, the main character, Valentine Michael Smith, you know, he also learns to adapt to human behavior by a lot of mimicry. You know, that which makes people smile, he learns that people like to smile. So he'll say things he'll make words come out of his mouth just so people will smile in response, because he wants them to feel good. He wants them to grok, as they say.
Right, and that's what I was about to say. Now, at the tender age of 55, 56, you're finally going to understand what all those people are saying when they reply to a question, "I grok." Because there are still people who grok out there.
Got it. Well, you know, with the pandemic, I've been trying to dip my toes into things that I've avoided, or either consciously or unconsciously. I'm not going to start listening to the Grateful Dead, though. That's where I draw the line.
All right, you know? Oh, you really wanted the emails this evening, didn't you? Dan, I thought I liked you.
I've got a lot of friends who love the Grateful Dead, but every time they try to turn me on, and it's very similar to the way my mom always tried to make me eat salmon croquettes when I was a kid. It'd be like, well, you know, You gotta like see them alive, you know. You gotta be stoned. And it's like, that's it. You know, if I listen to them sober and on a record, like most artists I listen to, I don't get it. Okay, I guess I'm just out. You know, I'm gonna cash in my Grateful Dead chips on that one.
Dude, if you haven't like dropped four hits of Orange Sunshine Barrel Acid and seen the Dead, you haven't seen the Dead, dude.
Listen, I'm not here to bury nor praise the Grateful Dead.
No. And in fact, if somewhere down the road, you decide that you would like to give them a fighting chance, just listen to American Beauty.
I actually have. I did listen to that one because there's a TV show I love called Freaks and Geeks, And on that one, the main character, Lindsay Weir, got the pretty much the exact same advice. So I'm like, well, if it's good enough for Lindsay Weir, it's good enough for me. I listened to that and the live Europe one that everybody says is
Europe 72, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, listen, it's on the list of things that people love that just aren't for me. That also includes Charlie Chaplin. And believe it or not, I'm going to commit the highest heresy of all, Bob Dylan. I admire Bob Dylan. I actually like a number of his songs. But overall, that godlike status, it just doesn't affect me.
That Nobel Prize.
I'd rather listen to, you know, the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack than pretty much any Bob Dylan album. And
oh, you've gone full iconoclast in this conversation, Dan.
I know. But you know, in the words of one of my favorite all time commercials, that's for Sara Lee Bakery Goods, you know, everybody doesn't like something. And in pop culture, you know, especially, listen, we've got so much shit to argue about in this life. We shouldn't be arguing about, you know, Martin Scorsese versus the Marvel Universe. You know, it's all just silly. If it makes you happy, go for it. You know, somewhere out there, somebody thinks Striptease is a great movie. You know, somebody thought Cavemen, the sitcom, was hilarious. And they're not wrong, okay?
For our age group, there's somebody out there who's still pissed at the premature cancellation of Hello, Larry.
Sure. Nickelback, you know, God bless you. You like Nickelback, go see him on tour. Go catch him at whatever casino they're probably playing at these days, whenever casinos do that stuff again. You know, fine. Just don't insist that I listen to Nickelback, and don't put big speakers up against my living room windows and pump it into my living room, and we'll all be good. For God's sake, what did they say? Why can't we all just get along?
Yeah, you know, yes.
We've got bigger fights ahead of us, kids, than Nickelback and Grateful Dead.
Well, I really, all kidding aside, I really think you will enjoy the now that you've seen it, you'll enjoy the documentary about Galaxy Quest. Because it's it's a fascinating story, and you know, you'll be on it like a duck on a June bug, because it's all inside baseball for what you do anyway.
I'm sure of it. I mean, every time I watch a movie now, I tend to go scurrying for IMDb just to catch some of the background stuff. And I saw that it was originally developed by Harold Ramis, and goodness knows he's done some great stuff. So did you knew that, right? Is that mentioned in the documentary?
Yeah, it is in the documentary, but I knew that. I knew that. I can't tell you how many times I've watched that movie.
Well, you know, I was going to watch, I was going to watch the Galaxy Quest documentary after having watched Galaxy, but I decided on part one of Showa instead. I thought, you know, that would be my documentary.
Well, there's a, you know, the thing is, it's one of those films that gets better.
You let
with
that Holocaust joke just slide past you.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
But, you know, it gets better on multiple watchings, because there are so many layers in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's no big giveaway. The reason there was a rock monster in Galaxy Quest is because Shatner always wanted a rock monster in a Star Trek episode or movie, and they could never afford a rock monster.
That makes sense. I'm sure it seems to be a lot of digs at Shatner. I like the thing too, where, and I'm not a Tim Allen fan, really. That was another reason I sort of maybe avoided it. But it was you know, that thing where he like goes to fight the rock monster, and his shirt just sort of mysteriously just rips off his chest, because Shatner just, when Shatner fights, he always seems to somehow lose his shirt, right? That's a thing.
And the shirt is an entire subgenre of within the movie analysis, or the or the bad overdub of Sigourney Weaver's line when she sets eyes on the chompers.
Oh, when she says, "This is just bad writing." Listen, they got a terrific cast for that.
Well, no. If you read her lips, she says, "Oh, fuck this."
Oh.
And the studio overdubbed the word "screw."
Got it.
And they didn't even try to sync it.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool that they. I get you. Well, plus there were some nice sort of Sigourney Weaver alien in jokes in there too. There was, you know, the references to shooting things out into the you know, into the space vacuum and all that. And I think she says a line that she's repeated as Ripley. I don't know. It's a terrific movie. It was worth my $3.99.
Well, I'm so glad, because I would have worried about you had you not enjoyed it.
Oh, sure. No, it's really well done. I mean, you know, it's also, you know, the special effects, they're late 90s, so the CGI is not what we're used to now. But that's kind of fun in a way, to just sort of see special effects not perfect. But the creature designs I'd read, too, were by Stan Winston, you know, so that,
yeah,
you know, you
can't. No slouch.
No slouch he. So there is that.
And yeah. the same editor who edited Being There, for God's sakes.
I didn't catch that one.
Yeah. The emails have started. Dave number 11 says, come on, Dan, admit you hate Steely Dan and puppies.
I like Steely Dan. I feel corny when I, like, if I listen to Steely Dan, it's usually in my car, and I really feel my 56-year-old male whiteness, because it's very, very white guy music of a certain age. It's really, it's a very specific demographic, and that guy looks like me, I think. Yeah, no, they're great, you know, but if I were to, I guess it's kind of, a secret like. Why, that's wrong, isn't it? I should be out and proud with my Steely Dan affection.
You're Feely, anyway. You're Steely, get over it.
Yeah, and I know where it came from. William S. Burroughs, Naked Lunch. You don't have to tell me that.
Yes, we know. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So
what else? What other emails are flying in already?
We will wait and see how it plays out. But I'm sure everybody's reassured to know that you don't hate Steely Dan, and that you didn't say anything about puppies, Dan.
Puppies? No, I don't like puppies at all. Puppies. Especially with the big droopy eyes, no, hate them. If I were president, anti puppy laws. That's me, boy.
Jesus Christ!
I've got. You know what though, and this is not what I came on the program to talk about, but you know, my kids grew up without pets. We never had a pet when my kids grew up. Not a dog nor a cat. We had tried fish a couple of times, but fish are just there to teach kids about the, you know, about death. Fish aren't really pets. They're you know, a television program you have to feed. But my wife's allergic to cats, and she always works at home. She has worked from home ever since the beginning of our marriage and to this day. So just the idea of a dog yapping around in the background just didn't really do it for us. So we just avoided having pets. And, you know, I've asked my kids now that they're adults, like, you know, is that a big deal that your friends had pets and you didn't? They're like, no, we don't really like them that much. We're glad. So I kind of am anti-puppy, you know. Is your funding meter going down now into the negatives? Are people asking for
Patreon
or whatever?
Not yet. So, you know, but I personally think 10 minutes in a room with a little basset hound puppy, and you'd be reduced to a quivering mass of adoration, but that's me.
Oh, you know, I had dogs growing up, and we had a dog. So, you know, but again, animals, to me, I just keep associating with cars and death, and I'm just bringing the room down with every word I utter, and I know this. So maybe we should talk about more fun things.
Well, yeah, and just because, like, as we've noted in the past, we are in wildly different locales relative to the Trump pandemic. How's it going up there?
It is going okay, he says with reservations. You know, in terms of the numbers, in terms of our place on the graph and what our lines are doing, we're kind of in that plateau, slightly up, but in a lot of ways things are going very well. New York City the other day had its first day, and I don't know how many months, but certainly how many weeks, without a single COVID-related death. And it just sounds crazy to celebrate anything. Hey, but nobody died of COVID in New York City, I think this past Sunday. And the state itself, we're holding. You know, we're doing well. Could be better, and I can testify to that just by looking out my window or driving around my county, and I'm sure in a lot of the upstate counties that are more conservative than Rockland County, I'm sure I can see instances of bad behavior everywhere. You know, a lot of my neighbors still just don't seem to get it on the 4th of July. I don't know what was wrong with me. You know, it's the part of me that doesn't like puppies and Steely Dan, I guess. But I, you know, I always go out walking at nighttime now because kids scare me to death. Side note to newbies of the show, I am a heart transplant patient. I mean, a lot of you know this story. You've heard it 10,000 times. I'm a heart transplant patient. I'm going fine after 18 months of this new heart. But for the rest of my life, I have to take anti-immunity medications, immunosuppressants. So what might get other people merely sick could kill me. So I'm especially cautious during all of this pandemic stuff and will be forever. I've always been especially cautious. But right now, I really do stay inside 99% of my waking time. And I was going outside for a while to walk in front of my community. I live in a townhouse community, but it's summer and the kids are out and they don't know nor care of social distancing. And I hope the best for them. I hope none of them get sick. They seem like nice kids, but they're clustered up in all different combinations and they ride their bikes all around the place. So I just can't be around that. You know, every time I go out for my 2 mile walk, It's just full of anxiety. I feel like I'm just stepping around landmines that move and so anyway, I've been going out at nighttime, and on July the 4th, I thought, well, you know, yeah, there's people are setting off firecrackers. I haven't heard them in a while. I think I'll go out now. You know, now that the firecrackers seem to have slowed down, and of course, as soon as I get out there, the fireworks start again, and my neighbors are having a block party. With like tables lined up, you know, four houses long of food and snack bags and beer and coolers.
Potato salad as far as the eye can see.
With raisins in them, right? Isn't that what white people like?
We
like
the potato
raisins. We don't like the raisins. I forget.
No. The Karens put raisins in potato salad.
Put the raisins in.
But no seasoning.
No seasoning on the chicken. But yeah, so. It was horrifying, and I got out of that pretty quickly. So, and everywhere I go, I still see people doing stupid, shitty things. Even in New York City, I saw a photo that a friend of mine posted in Williamsburg, which is the hipster capital, at least of the United States.
Yeah, Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and there was a picture of some cafe, and it was just packed to the gills with "I'm young, I don't have to worry about death," young hipsters. So. You know, everybody's an asshole. Everybody's stupid, no matter where you go. I do know people in West Virginia who have been super careful and super smart.
You're talking to one.
Not so sure about
the smart, but try to be careful.
Absolutely. No,
I had to walk into the store today, and Ferg was with me. And for some, we were engaged in conversation, and I just got out of the car and started. Got halfway down, you know, the stadium-sized Walmart parking lot, and I looked up and kind of squealed a little bit and said, "Oh my God, I don't have a mask on! What the hell am I thinking?"
Right.
And back to the car, put the mask on, redid all the hand sanitizer all over again, and then went into what I think of as the land of existential dread, Walmart.
Uh-huh. Right.
Where I can report that I think everybody in the store had a mask on, and only a couple of them were wearing them as chin straps.
Well, when does it go into effect nationally that Walmart, because I saw that Walmart, the company, the corporation, is now mandating that masks only.
Oh, the sign on the door said masks are required.
Yeah. I still think that's been jurisdictional, but now it's a corporate policy that I think is going into effect, if not already, sometime I think next week.
I'm pretty sure it was, you know, upon announcement.
Good. Yeah, you know, listen, that's how we got to do it. It's like, you know, if we can get them used to the habit through their frickin' Walmart, you know, then maybe at a certain point we can just keep chipping away. That's what I talked with you about the last time, that analogy of just chipping away at the loose pieces of ice on the sidewalk. You know, who's not holding on quite so tight to the mantras? Those are the people we want to get, you know. If you get used to wearing a mask in a Walmart, you realize you're not going to, you know, collapse of CO2 poisoning or some such nonsense like that. Then it just becomes habit.
But the other side of that coin there's been a steady increase in my news feed from various sources over the last couple of weeks of, you know, what have commonly become referred to as mask holes.
I mean, I know my rights.
And it's escalating. You got there's at least three stories of people pulling guns on people in stores over masks now.
Yeah.
And there's a new term that's circulating now, and it's, I ain't gonna wear no face diaper.
Oh.
And when you consider what comes out of the mouths of these people, as Lee and your neighbor Lee in the greater New York area pointed out last night, when you consider what comes out of the mouths of some of these people, they probably are face diapers.
Because ain't nothing but shit spewing out of them.
Right. So it's still an uphill struggle, and I check, you know, sometimes 2-3 times a day, covidactnow.org. It's been a pretty reliable resource over the months. And last night, there were 3 green states in this once great nation. And that means states that were on track to contain it. And they were New Hampshire, Vermont, and New Jersey. Well, today, there's 2. Because New Hampshire has moved to controlled disease growth. Next step, at risk.
I thought Connecticut was doing really well with it, too. They might be in the...
They're in controlled disease growth.
Okay.
And the thing is, of that group, which is the next thing to green, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 states. 9 states have controlled disease growth. 2 states are on track to contain. The vast majority of the states are at risk. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10... are active or imminent outbreak. And, of course, with the exception of Missouri, Arizona, and Kansas, those are the remaining states are all Confederate states.
Where's West Virginia on that one? I mean, I know everybody's spread out, but I know that...
We were red for a few days, and we're back down to at risk.
Maybe people stop going to Myrtle Beach for a week or so. I don't know. Let's see.
The young woman who works up at the Wiggling Pig, who was so proud to announce that she and her family were going to Myrtle Beach, I went in there the other day, and there she is. And I felt like I'd seen a ghost.
Mm.
But I think she wasn't there for 2 weeks. So hopefully she didn't bring it back with her. But there's no real way of knowing. She might be asymptomatic and doing all kinds of asymptomatic spreading.
Yeah, and there we get into the shit show that is going to be this fall when the schools open, and I'm sure you've talked plenty about it on your show, but, you know, the fact is we've got no plan, folks. I'm sure, Bob, you've talked about this plenty.
I've worn it out over the last 2 or 3 days, Dan. And, of course, you know, right before you came on, we had White House spokes-twit Kayleigh McEnany.
Oh, yeah, her.
Declaring, we can't let the science get in the way of the schools reopening. She really said that, Dan.
As we've said more than once here on the show, you know, science has become an opinion. You know, facts that the truth is no longer truth. It's just an opinion. And this is part of it, you know, you know, facts and data, that's just your opinion. Yeah, well, I mean, the only thing that really matters to these guys is, didn't happen to me. As long as it didn't happen to me, it didn't happen. And then when it does happen, they're the first to go to start up their GoFundMe pages with woe is me stories.
Oh, I got a GoFundMe page story, too.
Okay, tell it, please.
This was a barista out at a Starbucks in California, and he refused to serve a woman who would not put on her mask. And she raised all kinds of hell on him and tried to shame him on social media. And somebody set up a GoFundMe for him that raised about $105,000.
Oh, yeah. No, but she's isn't she the one that now wants a claim to half of that?
Yeah, she wants half. She wants half because she helped him get it. White lady, of course.
Yeah.
White woman.
That's monetizing Karenism, isn't it? That is a heck of a story.
It's a capitalist country.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of what I wanted to get into tonight a little bit, if you don't mind me steering it.
No, please.
But this has been on my mind, and it starts first with entertainment, as much of my thought processes do, which is that about a week or so ago, I guess a weekend or two ago, like a lot of people, I chipped in my $6.99 to Disney Plus so that I could watch Hamilton, and I enjoyed it a lot. Have you seen it yet? Have you done the Disney Plus watch?
No, I won't do Disney Plus. But
because it's giving money to Disney and they're shitty people.
They opened their stupid amusement park so that more people in Florida, so that Florida, which is bad enough, could get worse.
Okay, in my weak defense, I did it before they opened up. Although I'm sure I likely knew they were going to, because certainly the press was out about that.
And conceptually, it's brilliant.
Uh-huh.
The music, everything, awesome. But I'm just enough of a nerd that I really resent it when history gets rewritten wholesale.
That's where I'm going with this. And it's actually, you know, it's in the show itself. It's in the lyrics toward the end of it. Who tells the story? That's really where I want to go tonight a little bit. Not just about Hamilton, but about history. And history is a subject which I'm vastly, vastly underqualified to speak of. You know, I know show business history. I know the history that still goes around in my brain from seventh grade social studies class. But my daughter is a history major at McGill University. You know, she knows third century, you know, Asian history. She knows, she's read tomes. You know, she's read the history of an indigenous indigenous people. I have yet to read that. So, but it just, the idea of what becomes the story through retelling becomes history. That's really it. I'm going to sound like a knucklehead here. His story. It's a story, right? So, anyway, I watched Hamilton with Phoebe, my daughter, on the couch next to me and my wife over there. And, you know, I was looking at it like a theater major looks at it. You know, I knew going into it, okay, they're not going to go – I'd listened to the soundtrack already, and I knew they weren't going to go heavy into the whole stuff of slavery. You know, at some point or other in the show, Hamilton does say to Thomas Jefferson, well, you know, this economy you say you want to protect, it's based on slavery. You know, he does a little bit of a mic drop there. But the fact is that Hamilton, who did not own slaves, did have a business interest with the Schuyler family. That's the whole thing of the story, the sisters, Angelica, Eliza, etc. And the Schuylers were involved in slave trade. That's one of the many ways they made their fortune. So, you know, they don't – it's a 2.5-3 hour Broadway musical. They're not going to go into these grand debates about slavery, because also I think at that point in time and with those characters, they weren't worrying a whole lot about that. It was about King George. It was about, you know, what should be in this Constitution, etc. But, you know, at the end of it, you know, we did sit around, the three of us, and talk. And not only, you know, did we go into the whole slavery issue and how soft the show dealt with that issue, but also, you know, the whole thing of American colonialism and that wasn't addressed at all. This idea of freedom and liberty, yeah, for the white people that came over from England and and took the land because they wanted it and killed anybody that said they couldn't have it, which were the previous occupants. So, you know, it just sort of had me thinking a lot about how much history we learn from TV and movies, Broadway shows, you know, but also, too, just even the history classes we had, and you and I have talked about this, you know, growing up and taking West Virginia history in eighth grade, we didn't learn about the coal miners' unions of the early 20th century. We didn't learn about the Matewan Massacre or any of the other massacres, any of the, you know, contract killings on our own ancestors. And then, of course, we've all been talking, the president still talks about it, the desecration of statues and the meaning and value of statues.
Oh, Dan, I have lost whatever last fucks I had to give in regard to people who say, they're erasing history by taking down these treasonous traitor statues. Where does it end? Sorry, everything has to come with a stupid redneck voice. I apologize.
No, there ain't no apology necessary. It's a language I speak well, but
because you know, I Southerners are so stupid that they can't remember they lost a civil war without having the losers in the form of statues in front of them every day.
Well, this is the thing too. You know, I dug a little bit into the history of the statues themselves. You know, who? Let's look at the history of the historians.
Yeah.
You know,
when did those little son of a guns go up?
Well, we know that they went up in the early 20th century during the, you know, not long after the supposed, you know, Reformation period or Restoration period.
Reconstruction.
Yes. But who, and again, I'm a ding dong when it comes to history, right? But what I did learn was, you know, who paid for so many of those statues in Main Street? You know the answer to this, don't you?
Daughters of the Confederacy.
United Daughters of the American Confederacy. And not only, where did all this money come from, first of all? That's it. I thought the Reconstruction was about, oh, poor South, we've lost our economy and we're trying to dig our way out. Yet you can afford statues on every Main Street in the good old U.S. of A. commemorating Ku Klux Klan figures. You know, where did that money come from? But all what I didn't know, too, was how many of our textbooks, that whole narrative of, well, it was really about states' rights and that whole thing, that was also through the influence and, I'm sure, payments of the Daughters of the American Confederacy.
There was no nuance, there was no debate when it came to talking about Reconstruction when I was in public schools. There was no debate whatsoever about the fact that Reconstruction was evil. It was bad. And it was a bunch of Yankee carpetbaggers coming down and taking advantage of the poor, ignorant, recently freed slaves to get their way and bleed the South a little bit more.
Right. Well, this was Alabama, right?
Yep.
Public schools in Alabama.
But it wasn't much different in the rest of the Confederacy either.
Well, it wasn't that much different in West Virginia, and we were on the Union side of the line. I mean, we did have what I remember from my high school social studies class was the teacher basically said, well, it's one from column A and one from column B. Yeah, it was about slavery, but it was also about states' rights. Can you see it both ways, kids? And it was like at the time, I'm like, well, I guess so. But now it's like, well, the states.
Yeah, it was the states' rights to participate in slavery.
Yes. But, you know, as mouthy as I could be as a teen, I think at some point I just gave up and just went, you know, okay, if this gets me an A on the quiz, I'll write down states' rights if that's what you really want me to do. And I did. Not that I believed it, but, you know, I went along.
It's called shut up and pass the class.
Yeah. But, hell, man, you can go to upstate New York and you're going to see Confederate flags.
I know. Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota.
You know, Tyler County in West Virginia, I know there are plenty of them.
Well, you
white supremacy.
You've loved your rock and roll along the way. Did you ever hear of a band called Jason and the Scorchers? Years and years and years back?
No.
80s, 90s? Well, the front man for that was a guy named Jason Ringgenberg, and he later did a song called Empire Builder, or an album called Empire Builder, early part of this century. And there's a song on that album about the disjointed, disassociative feeling he had when traveling through central Germany and saw that goddamn Confederate flag.
Mm.
Which, by the way, we have a term for here in the Horn Family Community Congregation.
And what's that?
A dear friend of ours who has since passed away, a guy named Bruce, coined the term for the Confederate flag, the devil's diaper.
Very good.
Yeah, I thought so, and it's been in currency ever since.
I'm sure Bruce left a legacy longer than that, but that's a good contribution to.
He did indeed. He did indeed. But the larger point is that coming forward in history, do you remember when Nitwit Nero and Melanoma went to visit Poland? You know, Poland that is sliding further and further to the fascist right with every tick of the clock.
You know, I do. That may have been
when you were paying more attention to other more immediate existential struggles.
There's so much to pay attention to, you know.
Oh, it was early in his dystopian reign.
Uh-huh.
And he went to Poland, where, of course, it's not okay to fly the flag of the Third Reich, nor is it legal in Germany. And so all the right-wing Nazis, neo-Nazis, proto-Nazis, wannabe Nazis, whatever they're calling themselves, in order to identify each other, since it's illegal to fly the Hakenkreuz, they fly the Confederate flag, Dan.
In the words of Ed McMahon to Johnny Carson, I did not know that.
Yeah. It is an international symbol of racial hatred.
You know?
And white supremacy.
There were so many reasons to hate the Dukes of Hazzard. You know, I never liked the goddamn show. And I never liked the General Lee. I always wish it would go flying off a cliff and just, you know, hit the ground and burn.
You'd like to have seen the General Lee as the automobile in the final scene of Thelma and Louise.
Absolutely. I'd like to see Thelma and Louise enjoying a nice long lesbian kiss as the General Lee goes flying off next to them into the chasm. I hope we didn't spoil
Thelma and Louise for anybody.
Here's another spoiler. Wizard of Oz was all a dream. Didn't happen.
And you were there.
Yeah. And you were there, too. And why are you all standing over my bed? It's kind of creepy.
It's a little creepy.
A little bit.
Y'all Baptists?
Can I have the color back in this life? Because CP isn't doing it for me.
Hey, you know what? God only knows how many radio shows and podcasts there are in this country, Dan, but I'll hazard a guess that this is one of the few, if perhaps the only program today that has used the word sepia.
Mm.
I mean, maybe there's a photography podcast. Yes, and the emails are rolling in. You're a weirdo, Dan. This from Darlene in Connecticut. You're a weirdo, Dan, for not loving puppies. LOL. Jeremy in Vermont. Dan, stop telling us how white Steely Dan makes us. P.S. I don't like Steely Dan. Yep, Nickelback fan. Ooh, that was quality.
Yeah.
And,
that is quality.
And Eileen, not at all far from where you are. Eileen in New York City. New York City!
yeah, that's where we make our taco sauce, yes.
Right. Better share the secret of the first law of holes with Dan. You know, when you're in one, quit digging. He's gone from denying the values of the value of the Grateful Dead to not liking puppies. What next? Hating ice cream? I mean, if you want to finish the trifecta, just say I hate ice cream too and have done with it.
No, I don't want to become America's most hated individual. You know, I'll still leave that for our beloved dear leader. I think my approval rating is still hovering above 39%. So, I'm going to take a brave pro ice cream stance and pizza too.
All right, but that can devolve into a different fight. Favorite ice cream flavor.
And I'd love to have an ice cream fight with somebody from New York City. You know, just smack me right in the kisser with big gobs of Rocky Road any day.
Are you're a Rocky Road guy?
Anything ice cream. I mean, it could be green bean flavor. If it's ice cream, I'm eating it.
Do you have a favorite flavor?
I go in the Ben and Jerry's scheme of things these days a lot, and I keep going back to Cherry Garcia. And I know that's heresy to some people like my wife, who think that your base always has to be chocolate and you branch out from there. And Cherry Garcia has a vanilla.
Well, no, the greater irony is the fact that you don't like the Grateful Dead, but you like Cherry Garcia ice cream.
Listen, life is rich with ironies, isn't it? That's one of them. You know, as Alanis Morissette might ask, isn't it ironic? Only I'll try not to give wrong examples of irony. I'll try to find correct examples.
Oh, by the way.
Yes.
You've got you're plugged into the show business world. We need a change.org petition directed toward, I don't know, there's probably First Amendment problems or something, but they've done it again. I hate these goddamned ad firms that pick up an old song because, you know, some septuagenarian formerly famous rocker needs the money. You know, if in fact that person even owns the rights anymore, because rights to songs and rock and roll and all of that are, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Damn you, Applebee's.
What did they do now? They're bad enough as it is. What did they do on top of that?
They're running an ad celebrating the fact that they have reopened for business.
Oh, God.
Which was probably a terrible idea to begin with.
Oh, yes.
But they're celebrating their reopening with an ad that features the theme song to Welcome Back, Kotter. I was in another room, Dan, when that ran. The first time I heard it, and I was like Captain Kirk, marooned on the planet, you know, where you can hear him screaming "Khan!" all the way out into space.
Did you rip off your shirt?
Not at 57. Not at this level of paleness. I didn't want to blind anybody. But, no! Because, for one, that song became a hit because it was so catchy.
Oh, yeah.
And that means... That means it earworms.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to stay... Yeah, it's going to stay with you. Most deaf.
And so, for the last week, I've been walking around... Who'd have thought we'd need you here where we need you? And all of that foreign imagery. Because when I was a kid watching Welcome Back, Kotter, which, by the way, my father hated.
Really?
Yes.
I thought everybody
despised
it.
He thought Gabe Kaplan was a hippie. But all that foreign imagery of vast spaces of brick buildings crammed up against each other and rusty looking 70s mass transit lines running and streets under the bridges and I it was like I might as well have been looking at a feed from Mars.
Well, not to mention 35-year-old people still going to high school.
Well, that's true, yeah. But some, you know, the running gag of notes from Epstein's mom, it was always funny.
And listen, it was actually a not terrible introduction to the humor of the Marx Brothers, albeit told very secondhand. But they always did that thing of like Kotter was Groucho and Horshack was Harpo and all that. So it was a way of like, oh, if you think this is funny, kids, maybe you should check out Horse Feathers or something like that.
There were
homages throughout that show.
There were, and that may have been why part of why my dad hated it, because he loved the Marx Brothers. Maybe he hated the derivativeness of it.
Now, why did Children's Services not come to your house just for that alone? Now, granted, I mean, listen, I know I put down things like Steely Dan and Grateful Dead, but Marx Brothers, that's too far.
Oh, no, he loved the Marx Brothers.
Oh, I thought he hated the Marx
Brothers. No, he loved the Marx Brothers.
Oh, he loved the Marx Brothers, okay.
And I think he was sort of defending their honor or something.
I see. Well, you know, by the way, too, that the show was actually first going to be called simply Kotter. K-O-T-T-E-R. And then they asked a number of pop musicians to write the theme song, and John Sebastian's was chosen, and he was the one that had that welcome back refrain, and that they retitled the show.
I did not know that.
I scour IMDb like, you know, others look at the numbers on the Dow Jones report. What can I tell you?
Well, was that another show that was just based on a comedian stand-up? I mean, was Gabe Kaplan, was that it? Because, you know, like Tool Time was Tim Allen's stand-up shtick.
Yeah. No, really, that's a substitute teacher in the New York City schools. And when he got started in stand-up, that was the material that resonated. A lot like, you know, I mean, that also had a very big, I think, Cosby influence, because Cosby would go out there and talk about, you know, his childhood or later on his kids and the funny things the kids did. It's sort of that kids are funny humor that even Art Linkletter was really into, right? So then Kaplan did that, you know, in his stand-up, and, yeah, they developed it into the show. I don't know if Gabe Kaplan had the first Jufro on American television. I don't know about the show Room 222 and the character of Bernie, who was a student. I don't know if that kid was Jewish, but he had a big white guy fro.
But yeah, of course, Room 222 was terribly, terribly, terribly serious.
Very well, it was both. It was serial comic.
Yeah, definitely. Okay.
Karen Valentine would do, you know. You know, Karen Valentine things. And
yeah, she was sort of an offshoot from kind of a semi Sally Fields.
Yeah,
from her Flying Nun days and Gidget days.
Attractive, but very wholesome. Attractive, kind of a Sandy Duncan kind of thing.
Marianne, you know.
And Marianne, yeah. You she could be your kid's sister. She could be your girlfriend. She could be your teacher. You know, she wasn't threatening. She wasn't overtly sexual, but you know.
Well, there are all these little personality tests out there. I was asking you, you know, your favorite flavor of ice cream, which, by the way, you avoided until we got Cherry Garcia out of you. But you know, the other one is, you know, the classic, you know, Ginger or Marianne, and then for people maybe more our age, Bailey Quarters or Jennifer.
Well, I'm going to give this only in terms of the age I was at the time, because what I realize now, Bob...
And that's for heterosexual... Yeah, I'm limiting that to the universe of heterosexual teenage males.
This is getting very male gaze, right? And so I want to be careful about this. When I was the age I was, when I used to watch WKRP, I did have something much more of a crush on Bailey Quarters than I did on Jennifer. For example, you know, the same, I was very attracted to Mindy on Morgan Mindy, that same sort of appeal, right?
Yep.
But, you know, I don't play, but, you know, that was then, now I don't do that. I don't go into who's hotter, this, that, or the other, because, you know, whatever I may feel about that, it's really...
Right, well, and you can desexualize it by saying that, you know... Mick, Keith, Charlie, or Ron, or
right.
John, Paul, George, or Ringo.
Yeah, that's true too. And
you know, as the years have progressed and I've gotten older, my favorite Beatle has changed over time.
Me too. It still does. I couldn't tell you now. I think it's back to Paul, of all things, even though a lot of my least favorite Beatles songs are Paul songs. But just as a person, I mean, he's just such a beautiful person. You know, he just seems so... I know people who've met him. That's one of my bucket list goals. And we will get back to things important and political, by the way. We've gone down the trail of triviality, and that's okay. It's okay.
I'm not kidding. People need this.
Okay, it's true. We're living in shit times. There's nothing wrong with just sort of relaxing a little bit. But, you know, but I do know people who've met him, and he's just really as sweet as you hope he would be, and as accessible as he can be, given that he's like, you know, godlike status. He's a living icon. He will take the time to pose for pictures. You know, he doesn't have all the time. If he did it nonstop, there would be nothing else for him to do but pose for everybody's pictures. But he will take whatever time he has to be good to his fans and to acknowledge them and to accept all of the compliments that come his way with a tremendous amount of grace. I mean, it is like that Chris Farley sketch of, you know, hey, remember like when you guys did Let It Be? That was awesome.
You know, I know. And, yeah. And we are all Chris Farley.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I guess in a way that can be something, the conversation topic too, of how much can we relax and enjoy entertainment while the world is a shit show out there. And while we have not suddenly, you know, yes, there is a greater consciousness of systemic racism now than there was even 3 months ago. But that doesn't mean it's all solved and we can go back to stupid shit. We still have to keep our eyes on that. And of course we can't help but keep our eyes on COVID-19.
Right. And there's an element, Dan, of we are more aware. I think nationally people are more aware. Sadly, we are probably also more divided, because we can't take a step forward without one third of this country trying to take two steps back.
Yeah. All of that progress just got erased. You know, whatever we put the 2 months into, it just got wiped out in most states.
And the other part of this, you know, two white guys sitting around rapping.
Yeah.
The other part of this, though, is that real progress, and I hope I'm not getting this wrong, but real progress is not possible until at least January the 20th, 2021.
Yes.
And the possibility of real progress is conditioned upon the majority of us, because we are a majority.
Yes, we are.
If we choose to be. We have got to, we've got to decide we're going to be a majority. We've got to act with one voice. You know, I'm sorry that the reanimated corpse of Eugene V. Debs isn't going to be the Democratic presidential nominee. You know, to all of the yes, members of the Purity Patrol out there. But he's not.
Now listen, that's the thing too. You can talk all you want about the Democratic Party establishment. You can talk all you want about, you know, this and that. But the fact remains, people voted. You know, more votes were cast for this one guy versus the other guy. My favorite candidate, Elizabeth Warren, didn't get as many votes as Joe Biden. She dropped out at a certain point. I had to accept that. You know, it's the way it is. I still think she would be the best president out of all of the Democratic candidates. But she didn't make it that far. Not enough people agreed with me. I still believe, in the words of, you know, like just to paraphrase The Godfather, you know, I believe in America. I believe in democracy, right? And I have to accept when the votes, you know, disagree with me. I still believe that doesn't mean that polls, that I don't go for the conspiracies. I believe that overall the process is still the process. It's still a legitimate process. And the fact is, yeah, we had 3 million more votes against Trump, if you want to call voting for Hillary an anti-Trump vote. But, you know, we got screwed by the electoral. You know, that's not a surprise to you or any of your listeners. We have to do better this time around. When does the new Congress convene? It would be before the 20th of January.
Yeah, the new Congress convenes in the first week of January.
Right. So to me, I disagree with you slightly in that the real progress actually happens then. I think at that point, let's hope and assume that the current occupant of the White House will be voted out in November. But in those last couple of weeks, you know, he's going to be just flailing, and who's going to, you know, the new Congress is going to come in, and that's really important. And that's a thing too. It's not just about that one guy with his can of Goya beans. It's about Congress, and we have it in our means to flip that.
Let me temper that a little bit, if I may, please, Dan.
Please.
it's kind of the overlap is kind of weird. Because what happens is the new Congress comes in ahead of the new president because the Congress has to kind of get its house in order, literally, and they have to pass the rules for the coming term, and they have to figure out who's going to be the speaker, who's going to be the majority leader, all of
that.
That's
true.
And that's housekeeping. And the other thing you don't want, let's say we get our dreams. You know, I've been preaching for nearly 4 years now, dare to dream. Don't just dream about a 51-49 Democratic majority in the Senate. Dare to dream about the day when we've got 67 Democratic votes in the Senate.
Veto-proof.
You can accomplish a lot as the Congresses under Lincoln and FDR proved. When you've got a nearly bulletproof majority, but that having
which is
been,
supported by a mandate,
right.
You know, a populist mandate.
But that having been said, the other thing you wouldn't want to do is get a hell bent for leather Congress in there that would somehow or another miraculously manage to pass a bunch of earth shattering legislation. Only to put it on a lame duck president's desk and let him go, veto, motherfucker.
Right, right. They're not going to do that. That's true. Point taken. Point very well taken. But I wanted to use that to we can't just keep looking at the big orange meanie, you know, sitting behind his desk with his cans of beans. We have to participate in that. And I just also wanted to segue into plugging a few things right now before I forget.
Absolutely, I knew you did.
Because Jeff and I both, you know, we are white men, and granted that when we show up at the polls, nobody's gonna, you know, make us, you know, nobody's gonna turn us away for bullshit reasons. But you know, not everybody has that privilege. They should. It's in our laws. It was signed back in the 60s, among other things. But we still have to keep fighting that fight, you know. And there are organizations. My favorite, my pet organization is Fair Fight, and that's fairfight.com, which was Stacey Abrams created.
To check, is it .com or .org?
Yeah, I don't want to plug stupid wrong things. I'll get back to you on that one because I want to talk and not Google. Let me see.
Fair, no, it's okay. You talk. I'll Google.
Fair Fight 2020 is fairfight.com. Fairfight.com. I mean, there's a number of organizations that are out there right now. They're hitting the pavements. They're in the courtrooms as we speak. They're mobilizing to try to push back as much as possible against the very obvious brazen cheating that we know right now, we know that the Republicans have done and will continue to do because we do have the majority. They know it. They know their power is slipping away. And they are going to do everything they can, fair or not fair, to keep holding their grasp on power, to get as many of those judges, you know, lifetime judges, whatever, to get as many in as possible, to enact as many laws as they can, even if they're fading away, they're going to make it hard as hell. And but there's Fair Fight, there's an organization called Common Cause, and there's also just the ACLU, which does many, many great things for this country. And it's all about, you know, it's not enough that you and I get to vote. I'm in a blue state. My vote's gonna, you know, my state's gonna nominate, my state's gonna give their electoral votes to Biden, no matter what. You're living in a red state. Those five electoral West Virginia votes are going to go to Trump. We know that. But we also have to help the people in other states who are being denied the right to vote. And we also have to help those in swing states that could go either way. We have to do what we can to help. And there's a new organization I'd like to plug that I just got into recently called VoteSaveAmerica.com. All one word. VoteSaveAmerica.com. And what VoteSaveAmerica.com is about is they are, it's a website where you can go to register to vote, to get information on what the local. It's not just about Trump. It's about congressional. It's about government or governor races. But you
big
can
picture.
Also, yeah, you can also sign up to help the 5 or 6 swing states. You can help campaign in those from your own living room. You can do mass texting. You can do phone calls. You can go to support candidates running for congressional districts in Michigan or Florida. And you can do it all without having to leave your house. I had a not good experience the other night trying to help a group called, which was doing a mass texting campaign. They had some technical issues, and honestly, I had to drop out at a certain point because it just got technically frustrating that I couldn't join in. I think they were not expecting to have 500 volunteers. To do this, they were expecting 300 or fewer. But I think overall, Vote Save America, is that right? America.com. I think their intentions are good, and I think the local chapters vary in terms of how easy or hard they make it. And hopefully, Michigan United will get their technological shit together so that the next time I join them, and I intend to, I can log on with them. I can participate with them because I don't want just Trump out of the office. I want a majority, at least a majority of Democrats in Congress, and we can help. You know, I get so tired of seeing people lament, you know, their helplessness online, or think that likes and shared memes are going to do the trick. They're not. You know, it's really about voting. We have that power. I voted, and it's great that you voted. I'm not denigrating that, at least. We can do even more if we really want, and we can do it sitting on our asses if we want. I mean, marching. I'm not denigrating being out there physically as much as you feel comfortable doing. Those are all great, too. Whatever we can do, you know, voting should be the bare minimum, but whatever we can do. So Fair Fight, you know, ACLU, Vote Save America. These are all among, I'm sure.
Right, and if people want to pick out their favorite candidate and get behind them, try to help them out. M.J. Hager running against John Cornholio in Texas, and his approval rating something like 37%. He's running scared.
Running against.
M.J. Hager running against John Cornyn, the number two guy in the Senate behind Mitch McConnell, who also is beatable. That's what right. I mean, Dan, when I keep saying dare to dream, dare to dream, dare to dream.
It's not assured, right? Mitch is, I think, leading still, but not by that much in Kentucky.
And if Amy McGrath gets the help she needs, then things can... You know, if Charles Booker brings his coalition alongside, things can change in a hurry.
Sarah Gideon in Maine, I think she has a real shot at taking out Collins.
Yeah.
You know, Collins is Lucy with the football, isn't she? You know, I can see, you know, the point of these, I might vote to impeach him. No, sorry, Charlie Brown, I'm taking away the football.
And then she'll profess how disappointed she was that Charlie Brown missed the football and went flying into the air and landed flat on his back.
And if we want to stretch that analogy to its breaking point, that Charlie Brown continued to vote against abortion rights, and Charlie Brown has some sexual harassment issues in his past. My God! Now you're going to say I hate Charlie Brown. I love Charlie Brown.
Yeah, don't do that to yourself, Dan.
Yeah, no.
Lou just chimed in and said, "Better to try and fail than not to try at all."
That's right.
Absolutely. It's better to aim high and miss than aim low and hit.
Look, I have no science to back this up, no polling to back it up. But what I do know is that, first of all, we do know from polling that younger voters are on our side, right?
If we can just get them to the polls.
Right. Okay, that's one thing. But one thing that young people are really good at, and I say this as a father of 20-somethings, is they're good about getting online and doing shit. They know how to do shit through social media. They know how to organize through this. So we have this power over – we've got a definite strength over the other guys that we can keep using. We can keep uniting either to say let's all meet at this time in this place and march down the street. You know, let's all meet and go to this place to help people register. You know, it needs to be about more than memes and likes.
Right. That was where Bernie's campaign fell apart.
It did.
They were counting on a bunch of really, you know, I mean, it, young voters would turn out in droves for a Bernie rally to hear basically the same speech that he's been given for 4 years. But
listen,
with the latest band or act or whatever. And then when it came time for him to come out and vote, not so much.
Voting, I guess, isn't as much fun as going to to rallies in the park or something. But
right,
listen,
and hearing,
I don't want to be an okay boomer about this.
That's not okay boomer.
Yeah, no, I know. My point is, though, I was disappointed, even though, as you and I've talked about, if Bernie were the candidate, I'd be all for Bernie. And actually, I came to like a lot of things about Bernie.
Bernie bashing.
I came to drift. Yeah, I don't want to Bernie bash because I came to drift toward things while not fully, you know, he was my number two guy with Warren being my number one. And honestly, Biden was my number three choice. But now that Biden is the choice, I'm all Biden and I'm willing to go to bat for the guy.
And I would, James in Illinois just pointed out a little bit ago, Bernie's never going to be president, but he still has extreme value in the Senate. Insofar as he can push that progressive agenda.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, I think, and I may be entirely wrong, but there's something in me that thinks that Joe Biden, whatever his gut instincts are about what he likes and doesn't like, because you don't have to look far on social media to find some member of the sparkle fart propelled unicorn cavalry purity patrol hollering about whatever it is that they don't like about Joe Biden today. But the fact of the matter is, I am a student of history. It's not what I'm degreed in, but it's what I'm submerged in. And there's not a lot out there to suggest that other Democratic presidents who have done great things came into it with that idea in mind.
Mm-hmm.
They did the great things they did because great questions were presented to them. And so, as one of the tens of millions of uninsured Americans out there, doing something about healthcare in this country means something to me, and I've got skin in the game. And with that in mind, I don't care what we baptize the baby with as far as a name is concerned, but everybody in this country has got to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick. And maybe 5.4 million people losing their employer-provided health care might actually turn the light bulb on above Joe Biden's head. Because if you recall, and I mentioned this a couple of nights ago, if you recall back before the plague hit, we were bombarded on a several times a day basis. No matter what channel you turn to, and nobody in this group is turning to Fox or any of that other foolishness, we're talking about, you know, your CNNs, MSNBCs, what have you, print media, online media. We were being bombarded with this notion, and Joe Biden was a proponent of it, that Americans out there just love their employer-provided health care. And we can't take that away from them. by creating some system that lets everybody else have health care too. Oh, heavens to Murgatroyd, no, we can't do that. And then the pandemic hit.
Right.
And suddenly the people who loved, and oddly enough, and we talked about this in the months past too, for all the talk of all those people who love their employer-provided health care, I couldn't find any of them. I never talked to a single one of them. I know lots of people who have employer-provided health care.
You are talking to one now, just so you know. I'm extremely lucky with my health care.
You've got union health care.
This is true.
That's not the same thing as I have health care from Amalgamated Widget. And so I could they seem to be as rare as hen's teeth, and yet, you know, much like the vaunted mysterious white voter who voted for Obama and then voted for Trump, they weren't much in evidence. And so maybe that's gone the way of the dodo now, and we can actually talk about the fact that people can't be held hostage by their employers. And they can't and they can't be held hostage to a quirk of fate and a virus that's 1/100th the size of a human hair.
And I think it is fair to say that even prior to the pandemic, I mean, we every single one of us, I do, and I'm sure you do and every one of your listeners, knows somebody who has held on to a job only for the health insurance. You know, they don't, it isn't even so much of a paycheck. It's that, oh my God, if I lose my job, I'm screwed. I can't afford to be sick. That's real life stuff. I know that this administration keeps hammering away at the particulars of the ACA, and I know they've had success at it. I know that the million, I don't know how many millions, but I know that it's been at least over 12 million, I'm sure many more, that have lost their, Americans who've lost their health insurance since 2016. What are they doing now with COVID? I mean, what are those bills like if you don't have health insurance to pay for a ventilator? What are those people doing? And so many of those people are from the red states that supported Trump. So how do you reconcile that?
Well, but not just that, Dan. In the age of COVID, it's not just COVID. You know, for instance, in the CARES Act that went through, there was some $100 billion that was set aside to pay for people who might contract the virus and need treatment and not be insured. Mm-hmm. It was insufficient, but it was something. And it was supposed to cover uninsured testing costs and things like that. Well, that's all well and good, but the thing that we find so easy to shunt to one side in the face of all of this is that people are still having heart attacks.
Yeah.
People are still treating for cancer.
Oh, yeah. No, a dear friend of mine, a friend of mine from work, died last week of a heart attack, just out of the blue, not too much older than me, you know. So, yeah, it's still going on. It's not like all the other illnesses went away now that COVID-19's got the spotlight. No, it's all still people still getting cancer. People are still getting bankrupted because they don't have either health insurance or they've got very inadequate health insurance. You know, I do know people. You know, I grew up with and family members of mine who work in jobs that provide shitty health care, that they're covering as much, if not more than what.
And to be honest, and I don't think it's, it's just a matter of fact, the stuff that's available through the Affordable Care Act marketplace is in many instances garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I had it, I could pay $1,200, $1,300, $1,400 a month plus the subsidy the company would get from the government. And yeah. I would still have a $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000 deductible.
Well, probably 3 or 4 podcast appearances ago, I compared the ACA in its original form to a car. And, you know, it took a lot of work, a lot of sweat to get what we got in the first term of Obama's administration, to get what the ACA was. And we all know that the website had its issues for about a week or two. You know, we all know that some people's premiums did go up. You know, my sister's premiums went up and other people's went down. And so it was flawed. It was flawed because it was born out of to get something. You know, that's the thing about, you know, I don't want to bash Bernie followers, but you know, there's never been to me one of the main reasons that I never went all in for him is because I never found a real solid means of support of how this shit got done and paid for, you know, other than a magic wand kind of thing. And you know what I do know about politics from living a lifetime observing it, what I believe is that it's constantly born out of compromise. It's the only way shit gets done, is to just keep giving up your principles left and right until you have something that everybody dislikes equally.
Well, do you remember how democracy. I mentioned about the Dare to Dream and what, you know, what a strong Democratic Congress can accomplish?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in a way, that's this what you're talking about bears that out, because if you've got a Democratic majority, the compromises can be made within the Democratic majority so that you're right. Not compromising with people who hate your damn guts.
Yes, this is 100%. But just going back to the car analogy for just a minute. So when we got the ACA, I can't tell you, if I try to say the year, I'll say it wrong because I'm not the brightest bulb in these things. But when the ACA did get passed, I mean, it came out terribly flawed. We know this. And so to me, it's like you got your first car, but it's got some engine problems. It's not, you know, it's a little gremlin or something like that. It's
burning oil.
It's burning oil. But it doesn't mean we then take a sledgehammer to it. It means we got to fix those things. But, you know, because we went from a Democrat majority in the first 2 years of the Obama administration to a Republican majority in both the Senate and the House for the last 6 years of the Obama administration, that's when the sledgehammer started coming out. And then when Trump, you know, somehow got elected, we put down the sledgehammers and took out the blowtorches.
Let's be clear, the people who were wielding the sledgehammers and then the blowtorches had, for all intents and purposes, armbands on their arms and masks on their heads, pillowcases on their heads. Because everything that the right wing complains about the Affordable Care Act is rooted essentially in their, you know, DNA level racism. It just is. Every excuse they made was freighted with their hatred of the man in the tan suit with the brown skin in the White House.
This is true.
Now,
it's also, though, a hatred of the people that would benefit from them, a.k.a. people who couldn't afford it before. And for way too many people, poor Americans equals black Americans. We know this narrative is false, but it's still a narrative. It's that story that perpetuates, as we've discussed.
Yeah, and to go back to FDR for a minute, just for an example of perhaps how to fix some of this. Back in FDR's presidency, electricity on wires on poles strung from house to house was a rarity, especially in rural America.
Mm-hmm.
My mother told me stories of the electricity they powered their house on. It was all just DC from a Delco battery or a bank of Delco batteries.
Mm.
And from time to time, you'd hope that you could scrape up enough money to go and either, well, what you did, it was like propane tanks. You go and swap them out.
This was, I guess, for her, this was in the 40s?
30s. Yeah.
And where? Alabama?
West Virginia.
Oh, she was West Virginia. Okay.
Yeah, my whole family's West Virginia.
Oh, okay.
But the same obtained all over rural America. And so FDR wanted the private power companies to provide service to rural America, electric service.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the oligarchs of their day, the executives of the power companies and whatnot, said, oh, no, we could certainly never do that. There's not enough people out there. It wouldn't be worth our investment. And instead of arguing with them, FDR said, fine. And he immediately turned to the Congress and said, or the Congress turned to him, whatever the history of it is. And they produced something called the REA, Dan. The Rural Electrification Act.
Uh-huh.
And the entire reason for that was, okay, private enterprise capitalism doesn't want to do this. It's got to be done. I guess we'll just let the government go into the power business. And the screaming and the squealing like stuck pigs coming from the private electricity industry could be heard on Mars. Well, you can't do that. That's not fair. You're the government. You can't force us to compete with you. And FDR said, I asked you nicely to do it. Well, we have the same possibility here.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, one of the largest reasons that places like Texas have the most humongous number of uninsured individuals is because they rejected the Medicaid expansion.
Right.
And I'm probably, I don't know if anybody needs a refresher on this, but once upon a time, the entire ACA in 2012 went up before the Supreme Court of the United States on the question of, is this legal at all? And that Solomonic baby splitter, old Balls and Strikes John Roberts, said, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to uphold the Affordable Care Act, not based upon the Congress's claim of a right to regulate interstate commerce. No. We're going to uphold the ACA Act and say that those goddamned heathen godless Democrats done passed another tax on you because Congress has a power to tax.
But nonetheless, at least at the bathwater half full.
Right, but there was a.
They got to have the bathwater.
But there was another part of the equation, and this was by far the more important and dangerous one, because what he basically did was he made it okay for his insurance and the insurance executives to continue reaping a windfall of corporate welfare, corporate socialism from the government of the United States, in the form of the subsidies, but where the rubber really met the road. Was this notion of every one of the 50 states having to provide Medicaid to its working poor at 137% of the poverty limit. And so the Confederacy, mostly, was shrieking and howling and screaming about how you can't do that. Well, it's unconstitutional to make us take all that free money.
Right.
Because the
it's
way...
It's really just to spite the black guy, yeah.
Well, the way the Medicaid expansion was set up, the first 5 years were paid for it at 100% by the government. And after that, it dropped to like 95 and then 90%. But the legislation guaranteed it would never drop below 90%. And Medicaid, of course, is administered by the states. And the states have to come up with budget money to meet their end of that bargain. In other words, the Medicaid expansion, they'd have to come up with 10% of whatever that number was. And this was outrageous to the Republican governments of the South.
Right.
I mean, and this is another example of how, in oh so many ways, the Civil War never ended. Because they didn't, the Southern states didn't want their working class, either working poor white or working poor black, to run the risk of coming together and uniting in common cause and thinking that they were as good as their financial betters.
This is the root of one of the strong roots of racism.
And so what John Roberts said is, no, that's unconstitutional to make to force the states to take free money and have to pony up a pittance on their own.
Mm-hmm.
That they had somehow, that the Congress had somehow compelled the states to encumber their own budgets. And so I come back, and so it gets stricken. So you wind up, by accident of birth, dying of preventable illness without access to health care in Alabama and Texas, etc., and being able to get treatment in New York and California, Oregon and Washington, etc.
Not to mention Canada or Cuba, but that's another story.
Right. And so now I turn back to FDR. And this kind of also goes back to, I don't care what they call it.
Now, is this also, this related to the, if I remember correctly, the Tennessee River Valley Authority?
No, TVA is a different animal.
Oh, okay.
But no, FDR said, okay, y'all don't want to do it, we'll do it. You know, the states did not want to take the free money from the godless commie brown man in the tan suit. You know, the Muslim socialist, right?
Right.
You slurper.
Mm-hmm.
So what we could say this time through is, okay, we tried that, didn't work. So we're just gonna administer Medicaid on the federal level. Period. And everybody at 200% of the poverty level gets Medicaid. Only we're going to call it something else, and no individual maggot governor or any other kind of governor gets to lay so much as a finger on it. We'll administer it all from Washington, D.C., and by the way, old balls and strikes John Roberts, stick it up your ass. And it could be made to stick.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, power to tax. I mean, they already said it.
Yeah.
Can't challenge the government, the Congress's power to tax. Fine. That's how you want it. That's how we'll play it. And I have to think that if they are indeed people of goodwill, Dan, then Biden can sit down with a Bernie, can sit down with Democratic governors and figure out a way to win Civil War 2.0.
This is the thing I actually think works in Biden's favor, is that he is very malleable. Did I say that word correctly? He's very malleable. He will bend whichever the way the wind blows. But he's a career politician, and that doesn't necessarily mean that he's a villain. He, being a good politician is a skill. It is a social skill. It's a reasoning skill. I do think that, you know, he's an old dude, but I do know that he's surrounded by younger dudes and younger women and just, I think he's got good people around him. I think he listens. His campaign staff, and I think that he will listen and has listened to his advice. God willing, he's president. I think that he will listen. I think he's smart enough to know that to ignore the continuing progressivism that Bernie and AOC and many others have brought to the forefront, the ideas that are being offered as possibilities for our future, that to ignore them and pretend it's just the years 2008 through 2016, I can only hope he's too smart for that. That he does have to listen to other people, and that allows it to be. His malleability can be a strength, and certainly it's a much better approach to governing than I'm just going to wing it, and I decide what truth is, I decide what science is. I alone can fix it. I don't have to tell you. That's just not the way the job was set up to operate. Whichever political divide you're on, the idea of an oligarchy is something we this Broadway show is all about fighting, and that certainly our
the presidency that was envisioned by the folks in the velvet knee breeches and powdered wigs was one where the powers were separated and in constant dynamic tension with one another. And the chief executive only gets a few things that the chief executive is absolutely in charge of.
Right. What's frightening is, I hear so often, the laments of people like you and me of like, what is it? Why doesn't the base give up? Why do they keep holding on? Why does that 35% just, what is it going to take? And there are so many answers to it. Part of it is a hatred of us, this idea of whatever they think liberalism is, whatever they think socialism is. And it's also rooted, of course, in the evangelical faith. It's rooted in racism. There's so many things that keeps them solid. But what frightens me also is this idea that they do embrace a form of oligarchy government. This idea that maybe the government would be more efficient if one guy just had all the power and made the decisions.
Yeah, one person whose word was law,
yeah.
Who when he spoke, it became law.
Yeah, that's
we've got a word for that. It comes from the Latin. Dico, dicere, dixi, dictum. Means to speak. And from it, we get the word dictator. Oh, darn. I had someone on the stress line, and I forgot. I get wrapped up in these conversations. I was not blowing you off. If you want to call back in, that's cool. I'd love to hear. We'd both love to hear from you. I apologize.
Yeah. We have what, 18 minutes to go?
Something like that. And I got to share a note with you from Darlene, who says, I respectfully must take issue with Dan on the how are we willing to pay for it in regards to Bernie's Medicare for All. Mm-hmm. How about the damn 2008 bailout, which was the Republican wealth class raiding the Treasury on W's way out the door?
Oh, yes, yes.
How about the Republican and Trump administration tax cut for the uber wealthy that ran up our deficit to $4 trillion and counting? How about how about the raiding that's happening with the stimulus packages for COVID-19? It's all the wealthy companies taking all the money unless they happen to be revealed and called out. We can't even get a damned accounting from Mnuchin. She's not done yet.
Not to mention
the military-industrial complex budget that continues to remain, well, unaudited. Please don't tell me there isn't any money for Medicare for All. Why are we suddenly fiscally conservative when it comes to helping the hardworking people of this country? I love you, Dan, but sorry, I ain't buying it.
Darlene, I almost tried to talk over you, Darlene, through Bob, which was very rude and sexist of me. I'm sorry about that. That's not what I meant by the issue. Of course, so much of what American politics is about the distribution of the money. Where do we get the money? Where does it go? What I meant is more of this idea that simply through any person attaining the office of the presidency, that this money is then agreed upon by everybody, and this solution is instantly agreed upon by everybody without any factions of all stripes, both of the Democratic Party and certainly from the Republican Party. It just felt it's not easy. It's my impression of it, and it might be very unfair. And certainly, Darlene, you've given this a lot of thought, and you might be yelling at your computer or your speaker right now. But my impression has been simply that it seems to keep being presented as this very, well, once this one person is in, things go away, or that you know, there will be a mandate that then just we get the things we want. And the point is, again, I think politics have always been something, unless as Bob has presented, a majority, 67 in Senate, there's compromise left and right. And I wish, you know, I wish for so many good things we didn't have to give up so easily on our principles. But, you know, I can tell you through being somebody who's been involved in labor negotiations, which I have been as a shop steward, nobody who has power is going to just hand it over unless...
I didn't know you were a shop steward.
I was, for three seasons, I was shop steward on Law & Order, the original Law & Order, the Jerry Orbach Law & Order.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that was good because nobody else wants it, and you don't say no quickly enough. That's how I got it. But, you know, it's all the time you feel like when you're compromising, you're selling out your people, and you make nobody happy. You know, you're never going to be giving anybody what they want. But you're just trying to get something so you can move on and do these things. Listen, again, I've grown much warmer and more receptive to the ideas that Bernie has presented and many others, not just Bernie. And I think Warren was in many ways in agreement with a lot of those issues too. It just, what it all comes down to is very often I felt that the case was being presented as a fait accompli, that these things are done easily, and they're not done easily. There is no magic wand. I'm diminishing you by saying that, I suppose. But that's been my impression from some of the most ardent acolytes. And I don't know, like Biden, you know, I'm pretty wishy-washy myself. You know, I'm pretty malleable. I can say something on the show right now, and then either Bob or you can respond with something, and I go, oh, well, I didn't look at it that way. That's a very relevant point.
Well, and that's a perfect example, Dan, of what I was talking about. If you get enough numbers in the Congress, the compromises you're making are among people of goodwill.
Yeah. I mean, we all want inevitably some version of the same thing. It's just, you know, to what degree and how do we do it? How do we distribute the money? You know, or where do we start? You know, do we start with health? Do we start with education? Do we start with infrastructure? You know, do we have money for all of that? And yeah, you know, we could certainly take away the $1 trillion tax giveaways to the 1%. I mean, how many yachts does one need to buy?
Well, don't ask Betsy DeVos.
You know, what do they say in Chinatown? You know, how well do you need to eat? You know, how many meals do you need to eat a day?
Oh, give me a minute. I'll have that for you.
I know. I'm slipping in these things.
No.
It's interesting, this show tonight. It's we started with the dessert.
Yeah.
Our way into the salad.
I like salad.
Yeah, but it's...
No, I've got... Okay, so I've got...
I like it, but I eat it out of duty, knowing that I'm going to get deserted.
You said duty. Here's your clip.
Why are you doing it? How much better can you eat? What can you buy that you can't already afford?
Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah. Like, you know, maybe in some way, you know, I do identify with Biden just in that, you know, I am of a certain age. I'm not 78, but I'm 56. I am white. I am a man. But also, I do evolve. You know, the things I believed in 2006 would probably horrify me today, how close-minded I was or how I was. You know, I keep opening my eyes and my mind to things, to, you know, new pronouns, you know, the idea of gender identification. I just keep trying to listen. But it's not about me. It's about what we are about, what we can do. So, you know, Bob, can you do me a favor? So she emailed that to you, right?
Yes.
Could you forward that to me just so I can look at it? Because I listened, but I didn't listen. And, you know, there's some always a pressure when I'm on the show to just sort of listen, but at the same time think about what I might say next, etc. I'd like to read that, what Darlene said again. And
okay.
Just for my own private
Do I have your email address, or do we only communicate through other means?
I think through IM. I could give my... Is there a reason I don't want to
Yeah,
give
don't
my
do email? That.
Okay, I don't want to do that. I am me.
There are shithead trolls who listen to this program.
Yeah. Just I am me.
Okay.
Because I'd like to think, and you know, Darlene, if you want to become my Facebook friend, we can talk more about it. What I don't want to do is go deep into the rabbit hole. Should be president, and we can make Bernie president if we just try really hard.
Oh, that's not where Darlene is.
Okay, good. I do have friends that go that route, and it's time I've wasted too much.
And Darlene says it's fine to forward her note on to you.
Okay, great. Well, I'm also sure I have the exact. My name is Dan Fisher on Facebook. Just that, D-A-N.
And your avatar is a yellow circle with a.
Yeah, it's the same avatar I've had for about 10 years.
Yeah, I don't fool around with mine a whole lot either.
No. You know, I like it because it's me, but it isn't me. It's me without zits or warts. It's just.
Hey,
it's,
there went dinner in the Mountain Time Zone. Zits and warts, yay!
Anyway, if you or anybody else wants to be my friend, which is what another Godfather quote, be my friend, please do, and we can talk about it some more.
So speaking of if you want to be my friend, did you see the Tom Hanks Mr. Rogers movie?
I did not. It's one of those ones that every time, see, I like to watch movies downstairs in the living room with at least the wife and maybe a kid if a kid is around. And that's one of those movies I keep going like, hey, you know, we could watch that. And the wife and the daughter are both like, we don't care as much about Mr. Rogers as you do. Let's watch this. And so I'm kind of throwing them under the bus, blaming them for the fact that I haven't seen it. Even though, you know, a legitimate friend of mine, Matthew Reese, is the actual star of that movie. He's the lead.
Yeah, let me take a moment to recommend it to you.
Yeah.
Because the dynamic is a little bit similar here. I started it the other night, and Agnes looked at me and said, really? I said, yeah, really, because I read the original Esquire article. Aww. So this is going to be a story worth watching. And they did justice to Tom Junod's award-winning article, and Matthew Reese was fantastic. And of course, Tom Hanks, you know, Tom Hanks has become our Jimmy Stewart.
Sure.
You know, he just radiates decency.
Yeah.
And Matthew Reese is impressive as hell. And since there's a little bit of just a few minutes left, I'm going to ask you, have you bothered with his latest vehicle, Perry Mason?
I've not. You know, I want to watch it only out of loyalty to him. He was just you and Carrie, you know, I was the prop master on the final two seasons. They're just two of the best, most humane actors I've ever worked with. And Matthew also directed a number of episodes of that show. And I could gush for the next 7 minutes if I chose to. So it's kind of out of, it's sort of like when a friend of yours writes a story or something and like sends it to you and you know, it might not be your cup of tea, but you should read it cause it's your friend. That's kind of where I'm at. I don't know. I'll watch it. Thing is too, is I did pay the $6.99 to the evil Disney Corporation, right? So I could watch Hamilton. And I've got till August 5th before I cancel that subscription. So I'm trying to get my $6.99's worth out of this. You know, it's like I keep going up to the all-you-can-eat buffet, just even though I'm full. I'm just keep slopping shit on my plate. Here's some of the stuff I've watched. First of all, you know, they have all the Simpsons on Disney Plus. So I'm watching as many of the Simpsons, the old, the, you know, the first 10 years of the Simpsons as I can. That's been a big thing for me. But also I did, I only watched the very first Avengers movie and I was like, ah, okay. And I think I've told you, I've never gone beyond that. So I decided, you know what? Everybody in the world loves this movie. They're the most financially successful movies of all time. I should watch the Avengers movies while I've got Disney Plus. And I did. I watched all, how many hours total of my life was spent with this. And I got to say, you know, I liked them more as they went along, and they're good. But it's still, there's something just about that, so much CGI, that I just don't feel like I'm watching. I don't connect with massive amounts of CGI. I don't.
Oh, you are going to love the Guardians of the Galaxy. Galaxy Quest documentary. You are.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I asked you is because I know that you've spoken very highly of Matthew Rhys.
Yes.
And I'm impressed with him, and he's a Welshman.
Yes.
And it was, I heard an interview with him the other day on, I guess it was Fresh Air. And it was, he has, and of course, British actors always do. Mm-hmm. They master whatever American accent they need to be playing, and you don't know that they didn't grow up there.
Right.
Well, American actors ape some sort of British accent, and you go, oh, that's just terrible.
Hello, Governor. What's this? Yeah, that sort of thing. Well, I worked once with an actor named James McAvoy, who's been in like the X-Men movies and stuff like that. And he also dons you wouldn't know he's British American accent. He said, you know, we just grew up on American television. That's, you know, even though, yeah, we had the BBC, watched American shows. Those were the shows we liked. You know, he probably did watch Welcome Back, Potter. He said, so we just mimicked American television.
Yeah, you know, Ian McShane being a case in point as well.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and the Australians are the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
America's the world's entertainer. It's right up there. You know, it's eclipsed the manufacturer of the automobile, certainly, as something we do. You know, that other.
That nobody else does quite as well, yeah.
Well, can't say that. I mean, well, you know, I think the Mercedes and the Ferraris and so forth, those are pretty
good. No,
once
upon a time.
But no, America, that's one of our hugest exports. That, you know, food service, healthcare, and entertainment, I believe, are the three biggest American industries now. You know, manufacturing products, not so much anymore.
And in listening to Matthew Rhys, I keep trying to bring it around to him because we're just.
Please do.
It's so delightful to hear actors. I mean, delightful is the wrong word, but you know, talking about the art, talking about the craft, and again, back to Galaxy Quest, Alan Rickman saying, "That's the problem, Jason. You were never serious about the craft."
Uh huh.
But he competed for the Richard Burton Prize, which is a big Welsh acting prize.
Uh-huh.
And he never won it, and apparently it still bothers him. Uh-huh. But he did go on to do the stage version of Look Back in Anger, which Richard Burton, of course, made, you know, mm-hmm. he owned it. And he said it really frustrated him because he couldn't get Richard Burton out of his head trying to do the stage performance of it. And he was very disappointed in himself in that regard. It's the same, only different with this Perry Mason adaptation, because it's all prequel.
Mm.
And you watch that, and you know it's being released one episode at a time every Sunday evening, and there are four episodes in, and I am damned to figure out how he's ever going to turn into Raymond Burr. So it's a little bit of that same kind of thing. Couple of notes coming in. Darlene responding, no, Bob's correct. I'm not there with resurrecting Bernie. I agree that horse has left the barn long ago. I actually liked Elizabeth Warren, like Dan, although I had not committed to anyone during the primary. Looking forward to Facebooking with you, Dan. And Ron and Raleigh, subject line, the Koch brothers. When the Kochs did their assessment of Medicare for All, the results came back as costing less than what we're paying now, And that report went down the memory hole. We have the money. We'd much rather use the money to blow up brown people. And we also have the money, and we'd much rather use the money to buy 24-karat gold shower curtains as with Christmas bonuses for insurance company executives. Another analogy, beehives. When a beehive is in trouble, who goes first? The drones. The drones are all male. All the work gets done by all the females. One drone gets one chance to impregnate a female to make her queen. But when the hive's in trouble, the drones go first. They get the hive will stop feeding them. And that's the way I look at insurance company executives, Dan. They're drones. They don't do anything. They don't produce a drug. They don't administer the drug. They don't diagnose a disease. They don't treat the disease. They don't provide palliative or curative therapy. They don't change the bed linens. They don't empty the bedpans. They don't mop floors. They don't do anything but sit there and suck up money.
Well, that job... so many.
Well, that's in many instances, wealthy, that's the CEO class writ large.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really, you know, it runs counter to this. Again, it's another story that we've. History. It's a false narrative, which is that, you know, anybody can start out with just a little. You know, a billionaire if that's what they want. Millionaires.
Well, you know the old statement, the old query. What's the best way to become a millionaire? Start out with $999,999.99.
That's right. $500 million from daddy doesn't hurt in the case of you know who.
Right, and my God, Sparky was telling me earlier the numbers on cousin Mary's. Book are through the roof. It's selling faster than any of the previous tell-alls about Trump. Mary Trump's memoir sold 950,000 copies on the first day. It's a record for the publisher. And now it is in its 14th printing and on the way to breaking more records.
Well, you know, part of that is because themselves, these folks, you know, if they had said, If they had not sued, if they had not tried to keep pushing these, if they had not gone to the Supreme Court, interest. But, you know, how do you get a kid to touch the hot stove? Say, don't touch the hot stove.
Right. And every there was a time when every author who wrote anything even remotely salacious said to themselves, please let it be banned in Boston. Please let it be banned in Boston. Please let it be banned in Boston. Because banned in Boston, emblazoned across the front of the book, meant that it would be bought everywhere else.
Mm.
D.H. Lawrence comes to mind. Because once upon a time, Massachusetts was not the liberal bastion that it is now. Well, Dan, I think we've had a fantastic conversation. I don't think we have any bad ones.
No. I mean, again, last time around, I was a little less in the mood for frivolity, if you will, and I think it was a little more, entertaining, perhaps, whatever it is. I was a little more willingly frivolous than before. So yeah,
the beautiful thing is when we mix the fun and frivolity with the serious and thought provoking.
Well, yes,
even if we wind up having oil and vinegar salad for dessert, that cherry Garcia at the front end was awfully tasty.
Yeah, I mean that's how the French supposedly do it. I'm always told these things like the French eat the salad for dessert, or the French love Jerry Lewis, and I don't know if that's true, but I like everybody else. You tell me enough times, I'm going to say it too. I'm going to accept it as fact and say it. because I'm just as dumb as anybody else.
Yeah, but that was great. Salad, mixing salad for dessert, juxtaposing salad for dessert along with thinking Jerry Lewis is a comic genius.
Sure.
Yeah.
But here, yeah, I'm so glad we had this time together.
Just to have a laugh.
Have a laugh.
Or sing a song.
Talk about, you know, healthcare.
Seems we just started, and before we know it.
Before you know it.
And one of these days, we got to get back to the trivia thing. I haven't enjoyed anything as much on air.
Oh, yeah. Next time.
When you've got your list, just send me your email, Addie, on IM, and I will get Darlene's note to you.
Okay, great.
And as this thing, whatever, continues, please give our fondest regards to Helene and Phoebe and Gus. And tell
so
them
much.
that you know they're part of the family too, and y'all
Absolutely.
Do y'all do stay in our hearts, if not our prayers, because I'm not a praying kind of guy.
And just once more, I started by giving a shout out to your listeners. I love your listeners. I really do. I've become friends both of the Facebook and just of the plain old human being variety. With a number of them, and when they call in or email in during the show, that's just hearing that. Even though I did try to interrupt Darlene through you.
Well, you won't do that twice now, will you?
No, I caught myself mansplaining, and I'm embarrassed about that.
Well, don't beat yourself up too much.
I do that.
I know you do. I know you do. And I got 16 and a half plus years of things that I could curl up in the corner in a fetal ball and suck my thumb over, but you just got to get up the next day and do it again.
That's right. Just like Captain America.
Yeah. Maybe.
I could do this all day.
Exactly.
Okay, on that note, we should say goodbye. It's 8:06.
All right, and you don't have to take your meds for not quite an hour, so.
That's right.
You've got 53 minutes of just indolent boredom to cope with before it's time to get the handful of pills.
Well, I am hungry, so I'll feed my boredom, and I'll see you in like a month or so. I like doing that, like every 4 weeks, 5-6 weeks, something like that.
Yep.
I show up,
and by the time we talk again, we'll probably be back to or we'll be a little closer to figuring out just exactly what how much of a gang of homicidal maniacs they really are, as they try to put our children on their altar.
Every day is a surprise, isn't it? Anyway.
Yeah.
Till then,
Dan, you take care. It is always a joy,
time.
My friend.
Always a joy. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye now.
Love you.
Love you, man. And thus goes into the can and into history. Another conversation with I think the word irrepressible is pretty good for Dan Fisher. I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. I look forward to these. And I kind of let Dan drive the bus. You know, Dan says, hey, you want to? And I go, sure. But I try not to say, hey, Dan, it's time. Because Dan will know when it's time. It is time. Right. So thanks, all of you. I didn't say much about the fundraising because I hate doing that during these conversations. But I guess we'll have a Friday on the Front Porch goal of $395. So we'll see what happens tomorrow evening. Thank you, everyone, for keeping the program on the air. Thanks for sharing your precious, finite time engaging in the program in whatever means you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Hey, there is a, of course, Malloy will be hot and roaring and ready to go in about 51 minutes or so. So for the best Malloy listening experience, listen here at headon.live. Headon.live, Malloy, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. And if you want to hang out in the chat room to maximize your listening experience, you're more than welcome to do that, too. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And just to give you a little idea of what a boondoggle and what a corrupt mess the PPP program was turned into, or designed to, well, I won't say designed to be, but in the administration of it by the maggot White House, they made a grifty nightmare of it. We gave billions and billions of dollars to churches, but there were no financial institutions around here who were participating in the program. And so Little Coal River Mountain Watch, that has done so much with so little, was left out in the cold, while the Ayn Rand Institute, that despises taxation and government, raked it in with both fists. So when I ask you if you're going to do business with Amazon, to please go to smile.amazon.com, when I ask you to do that, it is because nominating Coal River Mountain Watch as the recipient of some of your sale proceeds, it adds nothing to your price, is incredibly important in the grand scheme of things, in helping Coal River Mountain Watch to continue to fulfill its vital mission. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe, please. Stay home if you can. Wear your mask, wear your gloves, engage in social distancing. Wash your hands, use hand sanitizer. Be super double plus careful. And one of the biggest parts of being careful involves what you do when some maskless COVIDiot, burbling and babbling about face diapers and breathing their own CO2 and Trump's going to make America great or keep America great, comes towards you. Avoid them like the plague, because they are. Later, y'all.